You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. Now, on with the audio chat.
We like to do that, some sort of, sync story time for Christmas. That would be nice, because I've got a couple of sync stories. I don't mind telling them.
Well,
I think it's like John was saying, actually, I think it is a case. You start to see these things. And that is what it is. You're starting to wake up to the way everything's connected and the way things work on different levels, whether you call them higher or lower or whatever. But the more associations you get and the more of these syncs you get, the more you can pick your way and navigate your way, you know, in this world and through your life as it's supposed to be, sort of lining yourself up with your way, you know. It's almost like you've got to find it. You have to pick it out and you have to read the signs to do it.
We were talking about this, weren't we? And I was saying that there's contrived syncs. Obviously, there's loads of those. We can find those that are interesting. But the powers that be are trying to ape godliness. You know, they're trying to. And is in nature, is there truly these actual real syncs, you know, that the natural ones that aren't man made sort of thing?
Yeah, those are really strong ones. Like you were saying, you've got some. Those are really great sync stories you tell, and that would probably. Reassure John, you know, because those are syncs then with birds or syncs with animals, or they're in really interesting. Yeah, so who's controlling them? You know?
are these man-made syncs aping nature? Yeah, I suppose that's the question. Isn't it? I mean, I think perhaps they are. and you start thinking, God, I sound like I can identify with John saying, God, do I sound like start sounding like a sort of religious freak or something? But God, I think we've felt that for years, and well, sometimes in conversation.
Well, I always had something left over for that. Basically, because I looked at things like this, it's like I say, Castaneda. This is why I'm kind of interested in Jason Horsley, because I went that way as well. I read a lot of Castaneda, and I tried, especially the first three books. I tried the stuff out, and the stuff I tried out worked. And so even now, it turns out, you know, Castaneda has got this very shady history and all the rest of the stuff. But there's no denying that some of those things worked. Maybe it's a case of, you know, if they throw out a few things, which is like, this is the theory some people have, and they throw out a few things that are truth, a few things that are real, and you think, this is real, and this works, because, and then before you know it, you're on that trip, you know, and you're, like I said, what Castaneda did to you in the end was de-sexed you, you know, because your sexual energy is the energy you need to be a magician. And so you don't have sex, you don't reproduce, you don't have family, you know? These things. Maybe that's what it was. But all the same...
They're trying to take the magician out of all of us. They're trying to cut us down, stop our breeding, get us all vegan so we become less fertile, stop breeding, be more like a bee, a worker bee.
Yeah, well, that's when I found Tantra, you know? Tantra's cool. So the Indians say, no, you don't have to. You can use your sexual energy, you know, and make it part of your power, and you can. So you can use sexual energy. With the Tantra, you can use sexual energy. You don't have to give up sex. You don't have to give up children, you know? That's the other thing he says. Yes, and that's really hard. And he says, you've got children. Your children are sucking on your energy. You know, everybody can sort of like believe that because, yeah, they do in a way. Yeah. But and you've got to basically not care for your children anymore, and then you get your energy back. Ooh, you know, it's nasty, really, isn't it? If you want to be a warrior, you have to disown your children completely. But I don't know. I think my children gave me a lot of power, actually, in some respects.
Sounds like a crap pot to me. Anyway, right, we're going to get an ident in a minute, so everybody cover their ears, because that comes in loud and fucking clear, doesn't it? But,
Is John still there?
Yeah, he is. But yes, syncs, we can hit on that. Do you know, the man-made ones Tom was talking about, that I put in films and stuff like that, they're there for us to take on board, but obviously they're trying to emulate something that does happen in the natural world. you know.
Yeah, sinks that, I always say that, I don't trust signs that cross their stage. But then again, if they're in this system, then they're doing the same thing. And they're going to be getting their sinks that's telling them to keep doing this or not doing this or whatever. I mean, theoretically, whatever.
I'm unsure. I'm unsure. You see, I believe at the top there's not really, I don't believe in this big conspiracy of, you know, one person. I've told you how I think decisions are made. I think they're made at the top, but aesthetically, you know, it's not about conquering a race or there you go. I've been waiting for that.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Should be a Christmas song, that,
now. Get your fucking wallet out. I mean, if there's anything to motivate you, I think that was terrific.
Have you guys all been buying all your Christmas presents lately? So I'm in a very blessed position where I don't have to buy a Christmas presents for anybody, and nobody has to buy a Christmas presents for me. So I walk around the shopping centre and I see all this Christmas nonsense, paraphernalia, music, all of these people pretending to be happy, wearing their stupid stocking hats because they're getting paid to wear these hats. And I think, man, this whole Christmas thing, once you're not part of it, it's a bit of a joke, really. I feel for people who feel compelled, oh, I've got to go and buy presents. Why? Because the TV tells you to. Why? Because your friends and family have TVs telling them that you owe them presents. Man, it's crazy when you think about it. Crazy, in my opinion. But I'm probably a crazy person. Now, before we got the streamer bot in here, I hate to interrupt, before we got the streamer bot in here, we were talking about, is it Jason Horsley? Is that how you pronounce it, Matty?
Yeah, Jason Horsley, yeah.
Horsley, because it's kind of spelled Horsley. Anyway, I've got the sync book. I've got both sync books, and I've got one of them in front of me. I've got his chapter. And I had forgotten, he's the guy who writes a chapter in the sync book, basically dissing sync. And so what he does is, he writes a chapter where he's asking himself questions and answering the questions. And so there's one spot where he goes, mate, he says, do you see the synchro mystics building their own matrix within the matrix, building their own rabbit holes? And that's a question he asks himself. And then he says, maybe, certainly I don't want to be included in what they are doing because it seems sort of pointless. And then he says, so why write a piece for this book? And he says, well, obviously I do want to be included, but only as a counter voice. That's a pretty interesting thing to be writing in someone else's book who's invited you to write a chapter, isn't it?
Like, it's always been
I'm too good to be here, but I'm here anyway.
Well, he comes from an elite family, so it's sort of inbred, maybe. That's always been his role. That's why he's always been interesting. He was also the first one. He was on Red Ice, asking Hendrik, "What are you doing here, Hendrik?" Actually, he was the first one ever did that. You know, so that's why I was interested in what Unreal thought of him, because he. Does do that. Yeah, he took then in his first book, he kind of, it's the idea that he goes, that he gets into all this, the occultism and conspiracy theory, and then he finds out about Fabian Society, and then, of course, he finds out that his grandfather was a mover and a shaker in the Fabian Society, so he starts, it's this idea that you start looking at conspiracy theories, and you find yourself in them, yeah? And then what Unreal says, which is true, is he pushes the, the elite paedophile idea, sexual trauma, some abuse. He does push that idea, and he kind of, because he thinks, well, he looks at himself, he looks at his brother, and his brother was this famous sort of bohemian artist who committed suicide and basically had a very debauched lifestyle.
It'd be very easy to write an Unreal bot. Basically, it goes like this. Does this person present themselves as a man? Yes. Then this person is a woman. Does this person present themselves as a woman? Yes. Then this person is a man. Does this person have their own independent podcast? Yes. Then they are a shill. Yeah? That's a very simple decision tree. And it pretty much works every time with Unreal, from what I can gather. He's a very curious cat.
For me, he's an extreme. He's got a marker, he's got a place, and that's where he is, right? Okay, what do you think? Okay, Bath, now we know where Unreal is. Okay, we can. That's one point of reference, you know? And it's a valuable point of reference.
Well, sort of. I'm highly confused by Unreal, yes. Very curious. What is he talking about half the time, you know?
I do have to give him credit, though, Tom, because he put together this like Excel spreadsheet of how many episodes different like independent content creators have done. Like,
wonderful.
And it was, like, he not only did he take the time to document it, his formatting on Excel is it's like almost professional. Like it looks good, and so it's interesting information that's presented well. So you've got to give him I give him credit for that. But yeah, the whole paranoia thing, like. I don't know, man. Once you get through that whole paranoid phase, when you're listening to people say that, oh, this person's a shill, that person's a shill, it does become, like, beyond comical. It's like, are these people just taking the piss? Are they just taking the piss? Or do they really believe this shit?
I think that John Adams is connected to intelligence. And I wouldn't say the word shill or whatever. I suppose he would be that. But, yeah, it's just my assessment. It's what I think from what's happened here. Reflection on the evidence, I'd say that's what I think he is. But I agree. I think you make a very good point in that we shouldn't be fucking paranoid all the time and running around calling everyone shills. I mean, I suffer from it as well. I've been having Unreal and question our reality. Oh, God. It's ludicrous. What a waste of time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. I don't know about John Adams, but, hey, there could be paid shills. Who knows? It's possible. But surely if they do exist, then their job is to disrupt us or to confuse us or to just stop us from being productive. Well, let me tell you how to stop people being productive in this scene. Get them starting to talk about paid shills, yeah? So if the shills exist, merely wasting your time talking about them is doing their job for them, isn't it? That's if they exist.
This site has been imploded at one time with this shill fest. You know, when the Psyopticon incident led to a vast, you know... mass exodus from this site. So yeah, absolutely, all that talk of shit. And I just stood back thinking, what the fuck? You know, this is ridiculous.
The worst thing about that episode,
shill stirring. I like that, shill stirring.
For me personally, the worst thing about that whole Cyberpunk episode is he's an interesting guy. He was talking about World War II fakery. Yeah, like he was one of the people who got me reconsidering what do I think I know about V2 rockets and this kind of thing. So people who come along who are questioning things and encourage you to question things, this to me is a terrific thing. It's the whole point of being here for me. And yeah, somebody claims someone's using a voice morpher, and that's it. It's off to the races, isn't it? You know, people love the drama.
It wasn't any evidence that he said. They weren't picking out any specific things he said and saying, look, this is disinformation. No. They were just saying, no, it's a voice morphing, and they had this... And it was an instinct that he was a shill. It was bollocks. I agree that Sharpton was interesting, and he was right. Zach Farman and Eve Ledner. He posted loads and loads of really of interesting stuff and taught me a lot, to be honest. And I quite liked him being around. But while he was here, he started saying some very weird things that were clearly not right. And when you know that he's well, for instance, that Jimi Hendrix was a fake and that. That he was, oh God, who was that bloke that was his brother or something, was you know, a cousin of Jimi Hendrix, went on tour a couple of years back, and he was trying to convince me that it was Hendrix, and he'd faked his death, you know. I mean, that's from this apparently really intelligent bloke who's talking about some really interesting things. So, and the
yeah,
other
but people
one,
can
one
be wrong about yeah, things. People, like some people think that I'm wrong about the war hoax, the history hoax. We're getting heaps of feedback through your speakers, by the way, Tom. So just because someone... Let's say that I am wrong about the war hoax or the history hoax or whatever. That doesn't mean that I'm a paid shill or that I'm here to cause troubles. And then someone says to me that they completely believe that sports are scripted down to the goal. Yep, they decided ahead of time this is going to be 3-1. To me, this is a nonsense thing to claim. But I don't think, oh, well, he's claiming nonsense, so he's a paid shill. That's just what he believes. You know, people have... beliefs that we disagree with. It doesn't mean...
But if you think a football game can't be scripted for 3-1, then you're naive.
There you go. So then you would say that my beliefs are nonsense, but that doesn't mean that I'm trying to...
cause sorry, mate. I've just finished this point on Psyopticon. He attached them a straw man argument to some original research of mine, and I just felt that was, you know, obviously false. That was the kind of thing a shill might do, you know, or an agent might well do, you know, to take original research that no one ever had talked about before on the internet about some quite major psyop and then add some specifically false straw man argument to it and try and present it like that, rather like perhaps September Clues did with their presentation of 9/11, saying all the footage was fake, you know. This sort of thing is, it strikes me as being sort of cunning deception, perhaps.
I'm glad you bring up 9/11, actually, Tom, because I'm wondering what is the prevailing view among fakeologists. Like, obviously, fakeologists are all separate people. There's no consensus opinion. But I do wonder, what is the common opinion now about 9/11? Because I'm still saying the planes were fake. I'm still saying the towers were pretty much empty. And I'm saying that probably, based on what I've seen, nobody died, nobody got hurt. And I could be wrong about any of those things, but those are my opinions based on what I have seen. Is that still the fakeologist's view? Or, like, I'm starting to wonder if the common fakeologist is really more of a realologist these days.
I wouldn't, but basically for me, I don't buy into that, the idea of a label of being called a fakeologist. Fakeologist is Ab, and good respect to him, love the site, and, you know, enjoy what's talked about on there a lot and find it very interesting. But I wouldn't call myself a fakeologist, you know, that if someone else didn't label me as that, but I'd reject the idea because it puts me under an umbrella of thinking we all think differently, you know, and it's so complicated and our thoughts, our beliefs are evolving a lot of the time. Is there a basic fakeologist view? Well, that 9/11 was faked and people generally, you know, didn't die. I think that I'd go along with that as being a fakeologist standpoint, if you like. That's Tim's. It's sort of a September Clues, 9/11, September Clues, or Simon Shack, you know, he's going with that at the moment. And I have to have reservations, as I've already said.
But those three points are pretty salient, aren't they? Generally accepted, no planes.
Yeah, the no planes thing is interesting because I don't know. Obviously, the footage I've seen, I can see they didn't look like planes, and you wouldn't fire jumbo jets into those buildings. It'd be too messy if you were faking it, you probably. But in New York and downtown Manhattan, what you could have had some dummy ones, you know?
Flyby.
There could have been something going on that I don't understand or know about, you know.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, these are those. What would you call this? You could put that in a grouping. That's sort of the unknown factor that, you know, the known.
Yeah, but you get
the unknown unknown that you can never really pin down. So you put those. You know, there's the 1% that's over this. You know, you always have to leave that door open. Just because you've learned from experience that it's always moving. You know, there's always something. I was wrong, so I'll probably be wrong again. So.
No planes was. Because I listened to Alex Jones for a couple of years, you know, before I got to that point, and he never mentioned it. You know, it was always, oh, no planers, you idiots, you know, no plane. By labelling, again, there with that, you could dismiss it, you know, it's something you could dismiss. And, you know, and maybe it's, there's a good point in there with no planes, because it opens your head, doesn't it, originally, and you think, oh my God, yeah, they could have done it like that, but, well, I don't know.
And
if you say that to the average person, they'll say, what the fuck are you talking about? They're obviously no planes, you know.
Well, you see, I was pretty confident of the no planes thing, but then I was chatting with a very learned gentleman named Rob McConnell from X-Zone Radio, and he's kind of opened my eyes to the fact that people, you know, his friends and family perished in 9/11, and, I mean, maybe the planes were real after all, you know. Maybe they can fly at 500 miles per hour at sea level, straight into the buildings. Why not?
Did you go on that cold, John? You didn't even check out his YouTube.
I've never heard of the guy. Had you guys heard of him before?
No, not at all. You checked out his YouTube site, and he's, you know, he's got this, you know, memory of the Sandy Hoax victims or something, right? So you should have.
Bro, they sent me an email, and what happens with a lot of these stations, like every now and then I will get an email from somebody like this, and usually it's from somebody on behalf of the interviewer. So it's like a booking agent or a booking person. And in this case, I didn't even realize the booking person had the same surname as the host. Like, I'm a busy man and I don't really care anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you want me to come on the show? If our times can match, sure, I'll come on as a guest, you know, and I'll try and present, you know, an interesting show. I thought I was coming on for 15 minutes. And then, like, in the pre-call, they're like, oh, it's four segments times 15 minutes. I'm like, a whole hour? I haven't even got any notes handy, but okay, whatever, let's just have a chat. And so, yeah, I'd done no no background on them at all. And I subsequently realized that the booking lady had the same surname as the host. And so now I don't know if they're, like, if they're family. I don't know what's going on with those people, but they invited me on friendly and professionally. And then before the call, they were friendly and professional. And then for the first couple of segments, it seemed relatively friendly and professional. And then, yeah, that third segment, that's when the rubber hit the road, wasn't it? And it's like,
you were no longer a special guest, you were just a guest.
Yeah, well, I was chopped liver, mate. They weren't my biggest fans.
It was set up, yeah. It sounded like you were set up. They knew who you were.
I thought
that's what it seemed like in retrospect.
I put a comment in Discord, I don't know if you saw it, but I thought it was a little unfair to say you failed on that, John. I mean, really, actually.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because that's what Ab wrote. Ab wrote that I failed, and I'm like, well, maybe I did, but failed at what? Like, what exactly? Like, to fail at something, there has to be an intention. You know what I mean? Like, what are you failing at? So maybe I did fail in that call, but fail at what? That's what I want to know, and I haven't got an answer to that question yet.
You failed at exposing 9/11 to the entire world, John. You fucking failure.
I honestly think and this is not a criticism of Ab, and again, I'm a big supporter of Ab, but I think some of my critics, not just on that call, but in general, this is their criticism, is that I'm not proving that 9/11 was a hoax to their satisfaction. And it's like, it's not my job to prove it's a hoax. It's my opinion that it was a hoax. But firstly, I could be wrong. But secondly, let's say I'm correct. So what? The masses don't care. The masses are never going to care, man. The masses are lucky to think more than one day ahead. This is just how they are. So someone invites me onto their show, and they say, we want to have a chat. Cool, let's have a chat. If they say to me, oh, it's your job to prove something to me, I'm like, no, it's not. I thought you were invited to have a conversation. I'm here for a conversation, you know.
It was interesting, though, that in the end there, he was basically saying, opinions, you're not allowed to have opinions. You know,
bro, I've got the recording. I've got the pre-call. Bro, I hate to interrupt you. I've got a recording from the pre-call. Okay, I didn't record the whole call, just the pre-call. I've got it recorded. And I say to him, like, I don't really know your audience. I don't want to say anything that offends anybody. Very polite things. I don't want to go and upset other people or their audiences. And he says, look, it's totally cool. All opinions are welcome, blah, blah, blah. Right? That's what he's saying to me before the call.
Yeah.
And then he brings up, how'd you get into this? And I'm like, well, there was this event. I didn't name Sandy Hook specifically because I know a lot of people get very triggered by the idea that the kids didn't die and no one got hurt, right? So I didn't even name it specifically, so I'm trying to be friendly, not upset anybody. And then by the end of the call, he's like, huh, these Aussies and their opinions. And it's like, that's literally what you invited me onto the show for. It's crazy stuff, man.
That is a bit better definition of what a shill is or how you've been set up there. I mean, it happens with mainstream TV. You might be set up. It's a kind of like, you don't know whether it's a fake or not. It's a kind of David Icke situation, you know?
But to what end, Matty? To what end? I'm a nobody. Like, what exactly are they achieving?
It's weird. But, I mean, because it's basically a syndicated radio station, but there aren't many views online or anything, yeah?
Bro, his YouTube videos get about 10 views each. That's no exaggeration. That is not an exaggeration.
That's what I thought. I thought, why was John going on here? And I said, yeah, okay, that explains it. It was very, very quick.
I asked him in the pre-call how many listeners. In a pre-call, I asked him, how many listeners do you guys get? Do you want to guess how many he told me?
I don't know.
4.5 million.
It's a syndicated radio thing. So I don't know. Well, that's what they say, whether that is. So he's talking about his radio listeners, I suppose. I thought, when I looked at that, I thought, oh, that's why you went on it, because otherwise, what are you going to go on? And then the first thing that comes up is this, you know, in memory of the Sandy Hoax victims, and I just thought, what? Where are you going? This is dangerous.
No, bro, I didn't go on with the idea of, this is going to boost my audience. Like, literally, it was just, they invited me on, and the time is matched. And I was like, sure, I mean, it's, why not? Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is, a lot of people listen to that, and they're like, that doesn't suit, like, the agenda they want me to push for them. But I enjoyed it, and I still got something out of it. And it was even, like, I can look back and go, it was kind of funny when I'm saying to him, where's all the filing cabinets and all the computers in the rubble? And he's like, that all evaporated? And I'm like, well, how come the passports didn't evaporate? And he's like, just 3 seconds of silence. Well, I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, neither do I. This is why I ask the questions.
I thought you did a good job. I thought you did a really good job. You stayed really calm. You stayed very polite. And he was going on a rant and... So the comments under the video, or at least on YouTube, are all on your side, which is, you know,
Oh,
well, you should have seen it, man. People went and left comments on their channel, like, under their upload. And when I last saw it, there would have been a dozen comments all bagging McConnell and his network.
Yeah.
And all the thumbs were down. I checked it later in the day. Comments disabled and thumbs up, thumbs down disabled. And it's like, okay, there you go.
I checked it too. That's right. There were about 6-7 comments there, all on your side and all dissing him, really, for being such a bad host. And
it's completely unprofessional, man. It was phenomenal.
I think he failed. That's what I think, really. It was a shit interview. He could have done much better and made it much more interesting. But, guys, look, I've got to go. I'll see you later. I've got to go and do some work.
Cheers, Tom.
Yeah, I've got to do some work, too. See, another 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to say is this being recorded, because there was an interesting thing that turned up in England, and the Daily Mirror reported on it, and it managed to sort of wheel its way into a show called If I Got News for You, which is like a very big media show in England, and it's about Ballybrack Football Club fakes death of a player in car crash as excuse to cancel match. How about that?
I heard about that story.
Yeah. And they make it as a sort of a bit of a joke and say how all the teams in the league then had a, you know, 5 minute silence for the guy and how it all, you know, how everybody jumped on it. I find that's also interesting. You see, everybody just accepts it and, you know, and they all jump on it. And then they put it out as stories and say, look, it was fake.
Well, listen, I hate to jump back in the conversation, but you mentioned Sync, and it's truly, when I meet someone who's read the Sync books, I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. So do you still follow the Sync scene? Do you still sort of keep tabs on what's going on with those guys?
Not so much. No, if they cross my path, I'll have a look, see what's going on. I think that was, but apart from Jason Horsley every now and then, I'll check out what he's talking about or who he's talking to. No. Actually, Jason Horsley talks to the guy, the publisher, doesn't he? I forgot his name. And they've also sort of
Alan Green.
Quite a lot of them have moved on, actually.
That's what fascinates me, because they did their best work with those books. So we're talking circa 2011, 2012, they released those two books.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, Joe Alexander, Avifenia Productions, his video about 9/11 Back to the Future, that went viral on YouTube, millions of views. And it's interesting because Joe Alexander is a former NBA player, former NBA top 10 pick, which most people don't seem to realise is, that to me is fascinating. Anyway, he has this massive viral video in 2015, and then nothing. It seems like in the 3 years since then, the whole Sync scene has just fizzled out. And then you consider the great work they did, and the revelations that they showed people, and what they produced, books and podcasts and videos, and it all just fizzled out. Like, just from a sociological perspective, I find that intriguing.
It is. Where did it go?
Where did it go?
Yeah, it sort of fed into other things. I think a lot of it went into conspiracy theory. And I think for some people it was genuinely something to do with their own kind of awakening. Yeah? And they're going through this stuff, writing about this stuff, and it leads them somewhere, and they're now living a different kind of life. You know, they found something they want to be doing, and it was in a way, you know, they were almost documenting their path, you know. And others, I think, some went off into Trump land and, you know, the kind of right-wing sort of conspiracy theory, or the, you know, religious conspiracy theories, all the various branches of conspiracy theory that we've got out there that are all on unreal spreadsheets. Maybe they got sucked up by that. And this kind of... Because Sync wasn't particularly political, was it? It was more, you know, Jungian and occult and all these things. And that sort of, like I said, that petered out. It all became very political after 2012, and especially after 2015. Yeah,
like it makes me wonder, like, suppose Ab just decided, I don't want to run this website anymore, or, you know, he just moved on to other things with his life. Like, what would happen to the media fakery scene? Because, like, Hostbusters Call, from what I can tell, has pretty much fizzled out, right? And then who else? Like, who else is talking about media fakery? This is a tiny little pond that we're in. If Ab was to stop running this website, like, media fakery would no longer, as far as I can tell, it wouldn't be a thing anymore, really.
Oh,
I mean, does anyone know of any websites, like other websites, where people talk about this stuff?
Not as head-on as here, no. Like I said, there are places where it's maybe... Yeah, but not as head-on. That's why it's good, right? But yeah. There's no... You know, I mean, yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, that's why I always say the people who support this place, like even just $1.19 a month or whatever, the people who are supporting this place, like, good on you people, because, okay, Ab doesn't do it for the money, but I can tell you as someone who puts a lot of time and effort into what I do, it's nice to know that people support what you're doing, and people can give you platitudes and say stuff, but even just a couple of dollars a month, it's like, yeah, this person cares, you know, and without Ab and this website, seriously, Media Fakery, it no one would be doing this. This is a tiny little place, you know?
Yeah, we're sending out a Christmas present.
Everybody should reach deep into their pockets right now, pull out whatever they can find in that wallet. And it's so easy now with PayPal.
Fold it up.
Yeah. It's like, it's never been easy. That's the thing, too. Like, once upon a time, if you, like, read a book by someone you liked, well, how do you contact that person? And if you like this website, it's never been easier. You just jump onto the site. Use PayPal, 3 clicks, bang, you're done. It couldn't be easier.
Straight.
What's stopping people?
Right, now we're patronising them now, that's enough.
Oh, I believe in this, man. I do believe, like, you know, we live in a time where we get to vote with our dollars. Like, I really believe this. It's like, people complain about the mainstream media, and it's like, oh, cool, so who do you support? Nobody. It's like, well, what are you complaining about the mainstream for? Like, they're free. That's the whole idea. So...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's how I do it as well. Pay podcasters to do their thing.
Well, I was saying to you before this streamer bot came in here, I loved your call with Ab a few weeks ago. That was great. Ab's a very good interviewer, isn't he? He's like a natural, you know? But you're too humble to speak positively of your own interview. Well, I thought it was terrific, personally. I think I even left a comment on it, actually. I can't remember. Oh, this one up. F-A-K... Matty, FAK213. I'm pretty sure I left a comment on it, man. Let's go and find out here at fakeologist.com. Tom Delper's in there, leaving all kinds of comments. Loves typing. I wonder what he does for a living. Unreal's in there, our friend Unreal. I didn't leave a comment. Well, that is very poor form on my part. I'll have to attend to that. Well, but anyway, yeah, it's 1:30. I've got to get going. It's 1:30 in the morning. I need some sleep, Matty, but this has been a pleasure talking to you and to the other people before the bot came in. It's weird. Napoleon came in here. He brought the bot in, and then he left.
Yeah, he wanted to get people talking. He wants an audio to listen to. This. Yeah, that's what happens. That's how I end up on so many audios lately.
it can be easy, can't it, to you jump on the Discord, start chatting. Next thing you know, it's 1:30 in the morning. It's very easy to... spends too much time here, isn't it?
It's when you've got the time, and for me this is just, especially now, just before Christmas and the run-up to Christmas, I've got time now. January things will change. So I thought, yes, well, no, it'd be nice to spend some time here while I've got it. And so, yeah.
Well, I've got a million questions I could ask you, though. Like, I love to ask from people, like, what do you think about outer space? Do you believe those lights are real planets? What do you think about evolution? Do you believe humans evolved? Dinosaurs? But we'll have to save all of that for next time, man, because it's 1:30. So you take care out there. Same to all the fakeologists. To all the fakeologists who support fakeologists, hope you guys have a Merry Christmas. Those of you who aren't supporting this place, you can get stuff. But those of you who are supporting this place, you're good people, and you should pat yourselves on the back. But I'm out of here, Matty, so you take care, man. We'll speak soon, all right?
All right, see you, John.
Cheers, mate. Hello. Yeah, I forgot to add... If you don't support Fakeologist, but you do support JohnLeBond.com, you're in the good books. You're accepted. But those of you who are not supporting Fakeologist or JohnLeBond.com, you can get stuffed.
Even that, isn't it?
It's like the flock of birds. But birds fly in the flock, you see the one who's kind of like off on its own. That's not good for that bird, you know? Like that bird isn't getting to the south without the rest of the flock.
He's not paying attention. He needs to straighten up and fly right.
It's battling against its programming, you know? Those other birds.
Yeah, it's animal behavior. Well observed.
Thomas, hello.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Speaking of page bills, it's Tom.
Cyril, I mean, you've come in here declaring yourself as a Mason from Hogsbusters School. You even met some of the people out there. We know that's an intelligence operation. So, yeah, but you're a nice guy, so you're very welcome. How are you doing?
Yeah. License to show, man.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
How you doing, Russ?
How you doing, man?
I mean, look, come on. We're human beings. You're talking about some really interesting stuff, about birds flying across. I love that stuff.
For a podcast, licensed for sale.
I got that analogy from John LeBon. By the way, johnlebon.com.
That's a good
podcast.
License to Shield.
It's a bit of a headache.
Yeah, no, but we started off this conversation talking about advertising and its relevance and whether it's used. We've come up to a number of conclusions. But I think Matt and Russ have seen it for what it is. And yeah, you need to get new ideas out there, and I think that's why Russ was mentioning how YouTube's not paid tax, and I thought that was quite an eye opener as well at the top level. You don't pay anything, you know. And it seems that America now, and Russ was talking about, Matt was talking about getting online, how they could market different things online. You don't have any industry in America now. Nothing's made there. So all you've got is the internet now. So, you know, breeding these people who are just online and susceptible to this new way of programming. You know, so if you don't fly right like a bird, you know, it's not good for it. And it's not good for you if you suddenly, you come to, some people do lose it in society once they start seeing the truths for what they are. So that's pretty much brought you to where we were in the conversation, you know.
Okay. I came in and that's how I heard it, and I thought it was really, yeah, it's true. It's interesting.
So, you know, but does advertising work on you, Tom?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it does. Without doubt, you know, but I am, you know, this is what I find I struggle, because in, you know, the analogy works in the sense that I'm stepping outside the crowd now, and I'm a lone bird. But obviously different animals work in different ways. You have lone wolves, you can step off the back of the pack, you know. I mean, what analogy are we working with at the moment? But I do feel that I struggle a bit, like a bird free from that pack flying along in life a little. I can identify with that analogy a bit. That it doesn't perhaps work on me. Do you know what I mean? And now I'm telling people, no, this is how it's working on you, but none of them get it. So I'm isolated.
Society's moving. Like, if society, the analogy would be like the flock of birds are like the society at large, right? And then, you know, you can move away from them all you want, and that's fine, but society's going to keep moving regardless of what you think. You know what I mean? Like, or where you're at in the position on it. The quote-unquote culture that, you know, the great stone wheel is going to keep rolling forward, as it were. Yep. You know what?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And there, you know, it's going to get to the south for winter. Like, it's just going to fucking happen. And
well, you always hear nomads, don't you? You never hear a nomad. You know, it's always a group of nomads. So yeah, there's never one that just stops off on his own.
Right.
You know, he turns into a hermit. So you know, you've got to try and keep your eye on society. But nevertheless, I mean, we're communicating now on the internet. Different ideas all over the world. But none of us actually really stand out in society. We only stand out in our own view of society to the average person on the street. Or
because we don't try to like fly back into the fucking flock and fucking aggressively, you know, swerve into the middle of it and try to get everyone to follow us our own way. You know, yeah, like it's not about that. Like, oh, you see a lot.
A Bill coming together here, some sort of seagull with a foghorn going, 9/11 was an inside job.
You know, and the other birds will just fly away from your ass. Eventually, you know, they'll just keep, oh, God, shut up, Larry, you know. Shut the fuck up with this 9/11 shit. We got a sweet lake over here in a parking lot. We're going to all shit all over all the cars. I'm trying to bring us down with this 9/11 crap.
I like birds. They have a sort of a magical quality to them, perhaps. Something that otherworldly to me, somehow.
Yeah, they're weird. But they're weird reptile feet, you know.
Oh, you should get into... What's that guy? What's the owl guy? What's the name of the guy who did the owl show? He did a...
Baldock.
Ah, what's his name? He did a. You're looking him up, maybe the owl guy. I don't know. But he put a group of stories together, basically from all over the world. People's stories about owls, you know, and owls seem to be very kind of mystical animals as well, always turning up at poignant moments and following people around. And lots of people have got quite a few good, really good owl stories. You know?
An auspicious animal, they would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, I had one with the magpie, the quite famous magpie as well. That was interesting.
Yeah, that was that great story. I suppose you should tell that. I was thinking if that's what I was hoping like earlier on today, I thought if you told that story, maybe John would tell one of his stories then. Because they get him on a personal level, that might be interesting. You know?
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong about that. That was all right, the conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay.
Okay.
I didn't say anything, but you know what I mean? I was interested in, come on, John, if you've had all these amazing stories that we wouldn't believe, come on, lay it on us. That makes you human, you know? Come on.
That's all right. Certainly not chat.
You know, I like John. I think if you were to, I guess you have to become, you know, if you don't engage him in confrontation constantly, you know, he's a good guy.
He's probably a bit sensitive, Thomas.
Yeah, I think, understandably, from what goes on, I think he started off as like really quite a really nice and pleasant sounding, but it's going to get more agitated as time's gone on, a bit shorter. But he repeatedly says things that I don't agree with John, and to be honest. Other things I do agree with, in the intelligent way he expresses things and talks about some of the ideas he talks about, but there's some specific things that I... really simple things to say, like, what was it? No one died on but her, or something, I know, or war is a hoax. Stop with these slogans, I don't mind them. Bigger things. And then he said that thing earlier with Jim Carrey, he's in the same position as the hanged man. I just put that up in the general chat, and it's, he's not in the same position as the hanged man. Looks more like David Bowie in Lodger. Maybe he is representative of the hanged man, I don't know, but. Yeah, it's just a man fall on the ground, food from above,
the other way, like
comedic pose.
It's layers. It's layered. You know, I mean, especially in 911 deception, it's layered on so many different levels, you know.
If you're going to layer it like that, you say, oh, his leg can be either bent in and bent out, then how many layers do you want? You know, it's like, maybe.
No. I mean, layered on levels. So, I mean, one of the levels is a biblical mess of war between, you know, Nebuchadnezzar and King Solomon.
Well, it does interest me, that picture of him lying there, because it's next to 737, something 27, and it looks like two towers, the yellow. No, there's probably something going on there. What's going on there? You know,
where does what's going on there come from? You know, like, there's probably something going on there, right? But where does this something come from? That's what interests me as well.
Yes.
With the layering, it's like, it can mean a million things, which, and ultimately, I believe, at its best, it means something to you personally, you know, but it won't, like, but where its origin is where...
Well, we were just talking about advertising delivery systems, so you've got the esoteric, and then the exoteric, and then the covert and overt, and then, you know, the political, I mean, these are all, you know, delivery methods, and it is advertising.
Is the man just the vessel for the idea, though? For the muse? Is the man just the golem for the muse? Or is the man the origin of the muse, too? No, I don't know.
I think they're trying to recreate the muse, as if to say, you know, look, we are gods now. That's why you do get the skip from 9 to 11 as well. You know, 10 being the god number, you know, everything.
The Aten in Egypt, right? The great Aten. Number 10 Downing Street. The 1 and the 0. The binary,
Alpha and Omega.
Black
and white.
Yeah. A third of 10.
Well, we do have a checkered past.
10 divided by 3.
That always makes me laugh, that saying. A checkered past. So, oh, I.
But 10 divided by 3 is what? Pi.
3.3 recurring.
3.3 recurring.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Just always like that. It's infinity, isn't it? How do you put it in the calculator? 10 divided by 3, and it's 3.333 that goes off the screen. They say,
with a line on the top of the third 3. I think on the top of the third 3 might be the fourth. You emphasize that it goes on repeating with a line on the top of the last digit.
It probably has a finishing point somewhere.
It has. That's what infinity means. There is no such thing as infinity, but there's like this thing, the tendency to infinity, which is like the infinity can always be identified by the addition of +1, right? So that's just really what it means, is the concept
apart from Graham's number.
Apart from what?
Graham's number, because they know what number a Graham's number ends in.
Uh-huh.
I think it ends in a 5. So, but that goes on for so many, and they actually know it ends in a 5. They don't know how many letters are in it, but they know it ends in a 5. Wait. How many numbers are in it? Sorry. Someone find out anyway. You know. But there you go. Graham's number. So this is that math question as well. But, you know, you were talking earlier about shapes, and once you convert a shape into a mathematical, you know, once you transfer it into maths, that's when it takes that higher form.
That's what math is. I mean, really, it's like where did these
angles,
like the idea of a curve, like what is a curve? This is what always fucked me up on the flat earth.
There is there's no such thing as a curve. The only way to get a curve is by drawing a number of straight lines that all intersect.
A curve is a line, right? So a curve is a line, and what is a line is like the intersect, two points, the connection of two points, right? So, and then a curve, but that's what a curve is too. A curve is a line, but it has a different, what's the word,
trajectory.
The way it's represented appears different, I guess, is the, you know, but ultimately it's a line. There's no shape called a curve, or, you know, there's no geometrical form. And it took them forever to fucking crack that shit. They still don't even quite know what it is, but, you know, we have the idea of what it is, but we can't really explain it. It's pretty interesting.
So do you remember what them shapes were called again? Sorry. The ones that you see when your eyes are closed.
No, the name of them properly? Or?
Yeah, there is a name set to them.
I don't know what it is.
But, you know, I'm sure if you've seen them, you'd be able to identify, you know, what shapes they were. They're probably something to do with, you know, it was platonic solids, shapes have to intersect and all that.
You're getting back to that idea of then, if, you know, it's the story, or it's like the ideas, you know, use us to sort of, what's the word, to process themselves or whatever
to manifest themselves. Almost
like a society would reverse something that they didn't understand.
It leans heavier on for that case because no individual can see the big picture. So not even even a large number of individuals, nations, no one can see the big picture until it's done. It's often years later, and even then we don't know for sure. Yeah, so it seems to be something else. So anything else that knows is like larger than we are.
Yeah, it's some kind of you can't see the process from within the process. You know? Like you can't be a part of it and then view it from outside it.
It's traditional conspiracy theories in a way is a kind of vain hope that someone somewhere knows what the fuck's going
on. Absolutely, it's the belief that someone knows the truth, and yet it's not fucking. There's no what support do you have of that? You know, what's your evidence for that? Like, how do you know that someone else knows? You don't, right? And how would they know? How would they know that what they knew was true? You know, where would they have learned that from? Who told them? And how did they get the information? How do they preserve it? And how do they know they're not just being lied to? So.
That sounds like that riddle in Labyrinth for the two doors.
But what does it say? What's the fucking riddle of the Sphinx? It says, what happens when the immovable object meets the unstoppable force?
Yes.
Surrender. Yeah, submission.
Thought it was no legs, two legs, one leg, or something, or three legs, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's some bogus stuff. The man one, that doesn't even make sense, you know? One has three legs, the cane isn't a leg.
Yeah,
it would make sense, like with the middle leg, you know what I mean? But...
we know Jake the Pig, don't we? See, all those years ago.
The fuck was that all about? Yeah. Yeah, I bet he had
two little boys.
Well, to stop it. You know, I mean,
who pulled the pedo handle? We were talking about fucking shapes then. So where does this spark? Does it just come from observation of like I was saying, residual electric in the eyes? When your eyes are closed, you see these shapes, and these shapes correspond to these so-called angles in the mathematical departments, whatever. Could it be something as simple as that, where you're actually seeing what creation is in our brain?
Do you think blind people see it? What do blind people see?
Everybody sees these same shapes, these eight.
Are you really seeing them? Like, are you them, or are they in just manifesting in your mind or whatever? You know what I mean?
We have the third, the third eye in the middle of the brain, where the sort of, so to speak. From triangulating it, you've just got your yes, like you say, it's an interesting question because you haven't got those two organs.
Yeah, because, well, when you look at that John Dee, you see him drawing a triangle inside a sphere, don't you? And that could be the eye. So it could be representative of some sort of, you know, when he's talking about Manu, he talks about magic, he's 007 in it, your eyes only and all that. So maybe that they were picking up on these sort of tricks. I know you're a Mason, so you're not going to tell us if it's right or not. But that sounds like, I can't really explain it, but it sounds tangible of where maths would come from. Otherwise, it is, you know, when they call it heavenly, you know, of the angels, of the angles, maybe, you know, the light, you know, and all these different things, maybe it is contributed from the, you know, the light that you see in the eyes and the spheres, you know, when they're closed.
It all comes from Plato, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he called his system Enochian magic,
but that was, but I mean, the angles, there are two different things there, aren't they? But the angles and where the Platonics, you know, all this stuff, from the Greeks, didn't it?
John Dee says that he called his system the language of angels, is what he said that it was. So, you know, in the way that I think he perceived that he was translating, basically, a language that was being kind of all ever present around, you know, but he's believed he kind of tapped into it. Aleister Crowley talked about Iwas was his higher angel, you know?
Yeah.
You know, what the angel is something that one of those words I have a lot of problems with. I don't really know what it's supposed to mean. You know, the definitions of it are not very clear. Like, it's,
and John Dee would have had to use angels because anything else would have been seen as satanic or demonic, or, you know, it had to be seen to be on the side of God.
Like now, like, well, now, like, we use like, you have daemons, you know, like, in, you're talking about Platonics. Platonism and stuff, and the idea of the daemon.
I didn't know. Is that part of Plato, the daemon?
Aristotle, right, was like the daemon is like the guardian spirit, like the guardian angel, the kind of
daemon. Omen. Sorry, that's
D-A-E, isn't it? Daemon.
Sounds like it. It made me think of it straight away. Anyway, go on, daemon. Yeah.
Well, these are systems. There's a very interesting intersection in technology between, like, occult names and, or what might be considered occult names and themes and ideas and, like, software and systems and, you know, strategies. So, like, there's something called a daemon, which is like, I think it exists in the kernel system in a computer technology. So, you know, it's just, what is, you know, why would they name it that? Like, why did they name this processing thing the daemon? Does it have anything to do with the other thing? Are they conveying the same thing? You know, are the ideas being conveyed through the same name? And I think they are, but I don't think that they're necessarily deliberately being, if that makes sense. Like, it could very well be that.
Isn't it a nod to old gods? What's still working the game, you know?
Like, did Oracle, did the people who, like, some microsystems, did they, like, when they made Oracle or whatever, did they really think, like, oh, you know, this is oracular. This is like fucking Pythia, Delphi. Like, this has some kind of prognostic of, you know, prediction. Or did they just think, yeah, Oracle's a cool name? But either way, you know, doesn't it ultimately function as the same thing? Isn't it like this kind of, like, information that's, you know, accessible through the Oracle software itself? You know, like, isn't that, aren't they kind of talking about the same thing? You know, I think maybe they are. But I don't know
they are talking about the same thing. Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But they're tapping into the same.
The
works is real, you know. You've got a great computer software system or a system of rule or anything. If it works, it's good, yeah. Same thing that tapping into.
It's the power of the name, right? Like, or something. Maybe 1,000 years from now, would they look back and say, you know, Oracle? Those people in San Francisco, you know, they.
No one is.
Small corporation.
You know that? No.
Or would they view it as?
Well, you've just reminded me of something. I actually
not yet. I don't know.
Thanks. I actually watched a film the other day called Immortal Engines. And it's about crustal displacement and then cities becoming mobile. So literally London is on wheels. But they were going through archives and they were actually reinterpreting history. And they said, I'm sure they said American Gods, and it was three of the Minions. So, you know, they actually can, the Minions were classed as gods in this new film.
Well, I think there's something, like there's Helvetica, the Swiss, like, personification. There's Atalanta, the one for America, and then there, or Colombia. Then there's like Britannia, whatever.
Britannia. Yeah, like
these are the three.
All very similar to the names of the boats.
In the Titanic, or in
The Titanic would be the Olympic, haven't you? And then the Britannic. So the Olympic, you know, could be Greek, Egyptian.
Kind of Titans in themselves, like the Titanomachy, the Battle of the Titans and the Gods.
Yeah, but there were only two ships made, not three. So, no, I don't know what does that mean. Does that mean America's false?
Well, everything's kind of false, isn't it? Like,
yeah, could America be the Titanic of countries? Maybe.
Is Leonardo DiCaprio here?
No, he's not here yet. He's coming in a bit. King of the world, isn't he?
Draw me like one of your Finch girls, Tom.
What is that? Draw me like one of your French girls, Tom.
You know what he says in the movie.
Yeah.
You're talking to me about something. He's confused the heck out of me.
That's brilliant. I'm sorry, I'm cringing now. Yeah. Exoterics put a wonderful picture in there of Kenny G doing the Hanged Man pose. And that's good. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? Because you've got the towers in there. Looks like is that New York with the Twin Towers there?
Well, they don't look real to me, them towers in the background, because, you know, I'm very good at spotting real towers and model ones.
They're CGI, are they? Okay. Excellent. Yeah, but that look, yeah, I like that one. I mean, that might be a fluke, but it might well not be. It's like it does look like the Fallen Man, doesn't it? Anyway, maybe it's I think we could simply think the Hanged Man is replicated in the 9/11 images of Fallen Guy, and in your one that you put up earlier, with the tower, that guy falling down with his hands behind his back and his leg folded under.
Yeah, and that also had lots to do with hijacking planes as well, that film, that's Con Air. What's his name? Nicolas Cage has a striking resemblance to Osama bin Laden in some of the shots.
National Treasure, isn't it?
I've not seen that, Russ. Is it good?
I don't know. I haven't seen it either. Hey, Tom, I saw your comment, you know, about like that guy I responded to, you know? It's not very clear, is it? You commented on somebody's video about something, about the, like the voice thing, you know, you made this very considerate, like.
Okay. Yeah. John, perhaps my Johnny Clues, you went looking after I'd said that I'd messaged him on his video.
What now?
Reply to him politely.
Yeah, you're very nice. And then it's like, fuck you, buddy. You know, it's like.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you must be a shill, you and Ab, go back to the nest with Ab, and you the sicko sort of Masonic arseholes, you know, I mean, it's just.
You're very thoughtful, you know, on your response, and like, really, sounded like you'd like really, you know, were very amicable, and,
well, thanks, you know. I appreciate that, really, because I really was, I was trying to be, you know.
And then you're like, and it's like, spit right in your fucking face. Like, you know, fuck you, buddy. I know your tricks, you asshole.
Oh, jeez. Man. Yeah. I mean, what can you do? What can you do? I mean, I can even say that I don't know if this site, if this fakeologist is like, it could even be controlled. Ab could be. What a master plan. But, you know, well, what good does that do anything? You know, it's to go around ranting and accusing people of being, you know, losing your mind, your temper.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't do any good for anybody. But.
Right. Well, what's the wackiest thing then? So, you know, that you believe that people could construe as you being mental.
I believe that Ab himself flies the planes that spray the chemtrails. I don't believe he's a driver. I believe he's actually a pilot.
Well, that explains why you don't see him.
Yeah, this is Tim's angle, isn't it? Yes, yes, he is actually, yeah, that's when he says he's driving, he's chemtrailing.
Rumbled. So by logic, we've worked him out. He can't see him, so he must be laying him.
That's right. Yeah, because they're always behind him, see? It's just, it only makes sense. So he's being honest as he's loading up the fucking...
Another season, because he's fucking laying him.
Well, case closed. Mystery solved.
Confirmed.
Oh. Yeah.
Funny. Next.
All right, Matthew, quiet.
Yeah, I'm still here, hanging in here.
Man, yeah, you're right. You sound very quiet, like you're falling asleep.
Yeah, it could be. It's getting late.
Oh, bless you. You were talking early. You must have been talking for hours.
No, not hours, but it's been quite long. Yeah. But now it's gone live, and I've said everything. You missed it.
Ah, now I'm getting it. The great talker that Matty is, and the great, yes, you'll, yes. Well, finally, so you've had a few people come in and actually tire you out. A bit.
Finally made my match, yeah.
You know, mate, you deserve a bit of peace and quiet. Not me badgering you. The work, sir.
So. Keep going. It's been a very interesting, we have discussed a lot of very interesting on-the-edge things, and but I can't, you know... Napoleon did a good job of summarising quite a few of them when you came in.
Yes, I think the not drinking has been a boon for Napoleon's clarity. About that, he's actually really quite intelligent.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
I can realise.
Time of good rules for all, man. Yeah. I still don't remember anything that we talk about. You know, it's all one big journey, I'll tell you. Just as long as everyone knows, it's, you know, it's not about neatly packaging things. Some things aren't meant to make sense. You know, you have to just label it for what it is and move on. But
you guys are good. You've got to think of a joke now. This is a joke that goes like this. The joke is, you know, the optimist sees the glass half full. Pessimist sees the glass half empty. The realist sees that obviously the glass is twice as big as it needs to be. And the fakeologist, ...
The aristocrat.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll have to go away and think about that if we can't get caught with one now.
It's all a metaphor.
there's obvious ones that aren't funny, I think. You know, yeah, like, right. And the fakeologist thinks it's fake. And it doesn't matter anyway. And the fakeologist just drinks it.
And the fakeologist sees the fluoride. There you go.
In the shell.
Yeah.
But no, you see, a fakeologist is that's. I've just had this thought has been going around in my mind the last few days because Felix talked about looking at things through fakeologist spectacles, and I said, well, I don't use that term. I don't really know what it means. You know, are you a fakeologist? You know, are you a fakeologist? Because it's Tim, isn't it?
Yep,
Tim's a fakeologist,
you
and that's his
identity. Yep.
Do I want to identify with that? I'm a fakeologist. Yeah, man. So, no.
Yeah, and we have to define your belief.
Much as I love the science, whatever, being around it, and, you know, but I wouldn't call myself a fakeologist.
Dell did once, didn't he? Dell told the security guards at the airport when he was having problems getting Rollo through, because Rollo said, I'm not a tourist, I'm not a terrorist, I'm a tourist. And then Dell said he found himself telling this to security, go, yeah, well, I'm a fakeologist.
It just
sound a lot better than, you know, a conspiracy.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you could use it. Yeah.
But I was a kidologist. I was always called a kidologist. Ever since I tried replacing, taking the, you know, the little lumpy bits out of bacon and putting them under my pillow, so they're too fair. So my parents attached ologists to anything I was doing. And when I discovered fakeologists, I was like, oh, thank God for that. It's a breath of fresh air. It's perfect. I'm a fakeologist. I'm happy to be a fakeologist. I might be a bit extreme.
Isn't that funny that your parents always use that term?
Just kidologist.
That's the one for me. Oh, I love that. I love it. Yeah.
Maybe
that's funny, man.
A more banal kind of reading of that scene in the film, because, you know, when the guy pulls out his card and says, it's okay, I'm a limousine driver, you know, it's okay, I'm a fakeologist, and then you're going to run down the end and fall out of there.
Yeah, like, you can do, excellent.
Well, it's a little bit more enticing than, like, saying the world's leading skeptic. or being a truth seeker. You know, there's not as many connotations attached to it. But fakeologist, yeah. Obviously, it's now they attach it to fake news and Donald Trump, you know, and that type of thing. So obviously, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, so next time you see something really happening on the street, you know, you can say, stand back, I'm a fakeologist. Yeah. Stand back, I'm a fakeologist.
But no one's going to die. No one's going to get hurt.
But see Tom's side of it.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. You walk into a psyop. Ladies and gentlemen, stay back. But no one died. No one's going to get hurt. That's fine. I'm a fakeologist. Yeah, we should be the fakeologist. We're this benevolent, nice people who's going around helping the people that are really traumatized by psyops. We're fakeologists.
Shit. Shit. Traumatizing even more.
Maybe just mocking from the sidelines. So, you know, mockology is an offshoot.
You know, I remember my ex-fiance, her mom, when after 9/11, during the anthrax terror in America, she was literally, you know, wearing the fucking long kitchen gloves with the fucking kitchen tongs, getting her mail out of the mailbox as the news recommended.
Fakeologists can save people from those deadly poisons, and they can also bring people back to life, can't they?
Well, not if they never died.
Exactly. Well, no, in people's minds, people that thought people were dead could then be, in some ways, brought back to life in your understanding. In reality, of course, because they never died, as you said. Right, so.
Yeah, can you imagine the meeting at Walmart, you know? How the hell are we going to shift all these rubber gloves and wooden tongs?
Oh, I like this. Paper was just playing with the idea. Yeah, it's good fun when you know you can use it for fun in it and that sort of way.
It's fun, though. It all has to be fun.
No, that's one of the main reasons I'm here because, like I said, because I'm trolling for stories too, and then you know, over the years, it is fun. Yeah, I think it is fun.
I'm gonna have to get off here in a minute, but let me tell you guys a joke. It's two Irish women were digging potatoes, right? And the one says, you know, begorra, these fucking potatoes remind me of my husband's balls. And the other one says, oh, man, they're that big? She says, no, they're that dirty.
Oh, I like it. Simple but lovely. The Irish accent, little bit, well, you need work on that. But the joke's great.
Yeah, the women were a little EGI, weren't they? But still, like,
you know, little.
A little.
Yeah, I got a joke.
Oh, yeah, you could make an EGI joke in there. What's it made of? Your husband's bollocks. No, mine, darling.
We're non-binary. Get it? No.
You want to hear a Christmas joke?
Go on, then.
Yeah, two snowmen. One talks to the other and says, can you smell carrots?
I like that. I like that one.
It always reminds me of
them two cannibals eating a clown. And one of them says to the other one and says, does this taste funny to you?
Yes. Why can't dogs dance? Because they've got two left feet.
Oh, yeah.
I got a fakery joke, you know. You know, there's this guy, he's called Ackerman. Yeah, and Ackerman hits 60 and he thinks time for a makeover, right? So he trains and he goes on a diet and he goes to the sun tanning place and he looks really good. And he thinks, top it off with a new hairstyle, dye my hair. Looks fucking brilliant, you know. Comes out of the hairdressers, walks over the road and the bus comes along and runs him over. And he's lying there dying and he said, God, how could you do this to me? And God said, well, to be honest, Ackerman, I didn't recognize you.
Nice. That's right. Is that better? That probably sounds funnier in German, does it? Mm. Fucking hope so. That was terrible.
A bloke walks into his daughter's room and catches her playing with her vibrator. He goes, what are you doing? And she goes, I've been married to this vibrator for the last 3 years. Next day she walks in his room, fucking legs up, her vibrator up his ass, drinking a beer on the bed. She said, what the fuck are you doing? He said, I'm having a beer with my son-in-law. It's terrible. It's terrible. I'm so sorry. That was crap.
This is bad.
That is terrible.
Really bad.
Our
only excuse is it's Christmas. This can be the only excuse.
Well, you don't have to get an excuse. I think I do. That was the worst one. So I've killed it. Yeah, all right, night. Night, everybody.
You should try another.
Another joke?
Yeah.
They're all there.
Everyone's got a joke, no? No one else has got a joke.
I'm no good with jokes.
The hoax-iversary. Hoax-iversary of, do you remember that Lockerbie crash?
Ah, yes.
And Adele, I've heard that's the only time in any of these big events that I've ever heard of anyone dying in it. And again, it's suspicious, so, because the guy who died was a son of a sort of well-known mover and shaker in Coventry, you know? So, we know if he was true or not. He's saying his son died. I don't know. Because he was too far away from me. What is that? I've never looked at, the fakeologist's view of Lockerbie. What is the guff behind Lockerbie? I don't really know. You know?
Well, the fakeologist's view. The what is the view here at this site and people are thinking? I mean, here at the fakeologist's site, you know, I'm pedantic about it, using that term too much. What is the... I know exactly. Of course I know what you mean. What do people think of it? Yeah, well, Felix has done started a thread, and you can look in the forums there. And
yeah, it's a good few years old, yours and that.
Backwards and forwards.
I think it's 2014. It
looks like a big psyop. I mean, that would be accepted view, certainly between Felix and I, and I think on that.
No plane crash then.
There's wreckage, there's some sort of bits of wreckage.
Yeah, it looks like it's been placed in the field, you know, the nose cone. And there's a huge big trench, looked like it's been dug out of the housing estate, and a little bit of demolition's gone on. In theory, it's less messy, isn't it? They said the wing disappeared, you know, into this cavern, and they found it, only realised it was in there because it disintegrated, because they counted out the bolts, you know, one by one. You know, and it's like, oh yeah. That's how you identify that the wing went in there. You counted out to 258 bolts, you know, out of this hole. I think they might have done it like that, sort of like a magic trick where you can't be crashing a plane, can you, into a, in a PSYOP, really, a jumbo jet into a housing estate. It pretty isolated on a sort of a road right adjacent to it, which it was gave good access, if I remember.
All shadowed in the Dyad films, the towers and the plane crashing and the supposedly stock market steel options, and you know, literally just so we've got it afterwards and before with the Dyad films there. You had the towers before the thing, but obviously Lockerbie was 88, wasn't it? Was it 88? Was it 87?
Was it 89 or 88? Let me think about that.
For some reason I had it down as 87, but I'm not sure why. Was it at Christmas?
It's 88, 89, mate. It is 89, I think. 89.
There's Lockerbie images,
1988. Yes. Yeah, it's 12 years before 9/11.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, you do get scripted in the Dyad films to do with, you know, terrorism at the tower. And then the second film is all about planes crashing, but obviously the Lockerbie one there was just showing you how flimsy a plane is and how it could disappear. So obviously that's foreshadowing 9/11 as well.
Yeah, 21st of December. Well, that was actually, that is today. It is the hoaxiversary, 1988. Right, 103. Uh-huh. 22nd of June, 1989, what's that? Yeah, on the 22nd of June, 1989, I need to have a look at that. Half in history, just before Chris. Happy Christmas.
Big year for media, lots to do with, remember that Beatrice being born on the 8 a.m. 1988, being named Beatrice, you know, B, obviously, that's good, B. That was my first year introduced to news, it wasn't too
that
good.
That caught your ear, that's synchronous.
Because when I went back looking at, you know, like that year, because everybody does, don't they, they'll pick a year, you know, I just picked 88. And some of the stuff that happened, I was like, right, I really do. And it was the first time news was being sort of advertised to kids, you know, news round, you know, things like that. That was all to do with, you know, nuclear power submarines and lots of pyramid stuff and satellites. And yeah, amazing. You know, you realise, right, that's when it's, you know, starting afresh with young minds to put in just a no holds barred, all the psyops are in. Because we had the Challenger accident in 86, didn't you? It was only 2 years after that, so lots to do with space and pushing that. Like I say, just going back and looking at 88 was pretty much the year where everything happened, and that plane crash, I do remember it being Christmas time, and, you know, like you say, kids and the just weird things that was that came across a different way to me. But looking at it now, it's just definitely foreshadowing of the flimsiness of planes. It's like the Dyad film, Dyad 2. It's weird.
It was a Dyad film, do you think?
Yeah, and do you know what's funny as well about Dyad 2? One of the planes actually takes a detour and does something. It did this. One of the 9/11 planes did the same, supposedly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it could have been like, yeah, I don't know. It could have been. It was a bomb, wasn't it, on the 103?
Pardon?
Yeah, it was a bomb on the 103. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I've seen the recreations and things like that as well.
It's one of those classic. There's a whole, like, a Shanksville, you know? There's a trough in the ground, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, really? A plane went in there? Yeah, and the wing and the whole fuselage disappeared in there, disintegrated into nothing. Okay. You're telling us that. Yeah, it's one of those, I think. So, American English operation as well, because it was a Pan Am flight to the States, wasn't it? And
yes, it was a Chicago
operation with a lot of American casualties, but happened in Scotland. So it was a, you know, the special relationship, you know, States and English. Somehow.
Strengthened. A dual prank.
By that. Why not?
Did you follow up? Did you check on the so-called victims or whatever? Did you follow up on that, or was it just you're just mainly looking at the images and things?
Tom, I was going to say all I did is read there too. They're backwards and forwards in fakeologist.com, and that'll do me. Most of the information's in there between them too. The good information, that is.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's what was the question again? It seems reasonable. Yes, Felix. I think Felix would have looked at those. It certainly it fascinates him, doesn't it? People that pretend dead. Actually, there was quite a few casualties on that plane, and it probably would take some. I get to a point that I don't. It's almost like I don't look at those for some reason. I kind of know it's fake and just know it's faked in, and it bores me to look anymore. But actually, real proper research, you'd have to check through it and go back and look at it. I'm sure I've read it before to my satisfaction. I'm sure we looked into it a bit. I'm sure Felix did anyway.
It's all here, all the lists, the archives, it's all here.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope they are alive. You know, they must be alive. I don't know.
Some of the videos still up as well, super.
Nice. I mean, yeah, it's.
This brings me on to another thing as well. You just mentioning planes there and people being alive, and you just straight away just thought of Beetlejuice, you know, like you get that team, don't you, that down a plane, you know, and you see them, you know, in the waiting room for death. Remember that film, Beetlejuice?
Yeah, vaguely.
Tim Burton. Tim Burton's a Hulk, so I've no idea why he exists. He's just fucking. He's imaginary, and I don't understand that stuff he does. But nevertheless, I mean, you do see the, you know, his team in limbo. You know, they've had a plane crash, and obviously they're still alive, waiting to be ushered on to the next land or whatever it is. And, that was just around about the same time as this plane crash as well. You know, and that shows that people not being dead. Movies, it doesn't matter if they come out afterwards or before, because within 4 years, someone will say, oh, no, that's out of the movie. You know, so it's... You know, you end up with people.
I mean, the thing is, you know, actually, you have to go a long way and a lot of looking at things very deeply and thinking about it a bit to even suspect that something's dramatic and big as reported as Lockerbie is fake. Do you know what I mean?
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Well, yeah, but what about when you were looking into the victims with Abba fan, and you were listening to them audios? I mean, that in itself was quite, you know, quite an eye-opener.
Oh, God, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. No, of course I've looked at it before, things like that before.
That's what I mean, so just that there in itself, that little thing, you know, you don't have to go into detail, you know it's fake, so you know it's contrived somewhere along the line, so you sort of do lose heart, and yeah, definitely the same with the Lockerbie thing, you know, why look into the victims when it, you know, it looks contrived again? I looked into the witness accounts and stuff like that because, you know, because everything cause it took place at night time there.
It's all part of good research and sort of just looking at the op in entirety. And it's just, really, I think it perhaps comes down to, you know, what, that important, but it's still interesting, you know, to go right into the details of every next little victim here and there. You know, it's how do they do this and how thorough is the cover and, you know, but it's a question that doesn't really, I don't go deeply into. I don't know. Someone messaged me once on Facebook and said, "Are you," and it was a girl, young, so blonde, and it was mine. She said, "Are you the guy that the article on ABBA fan?" And it was like a blush and a question mark sort of thing. And I just sort of, you know, I thought, start talking about specific people, someone, you know. Child. They may have not lost it in that event, but they could have lost a child, and that would be
the rules of common decency stop you from interacting. This is why it's a lot easier to interact with people who seem to be on a light-minded or less easier to trigger. Especially someone who's obviously getting in contact with you for a specific thing that you've talked about and you've only talked about, speculation-wise, obviously. You know what I mean? Don't need the grief.
About 1988.
I'm going for piss back in a minute.
I was doing some things in 1988. I'm just looking at that Pan Am thing. I'm talking, sort of trying to look, read, and speak at the same time, and I'm going, probably talking crap, but excuse me. I think it's when you find it, looking into victims. With Pan Am 103 they are. You can be sure of that one. Made of the Seas. 159 fatalities. It's a lot of victims. Quite a lot.
Medium, large.
Which one? So, Lockerbie or the...
The hoaxiversary of Lockerbie, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. A lot of victims, that's what I mean.
Yes. Yes, 259. Well, I mean, I really think it was, from what I've looked at, I haven't looked at it for years, really, you know. I haven't gone back and looked at it again with new glasses, temporary glasses.
No, there are a few.
But no, I've known it was, it was a big site before Christmas 88. It was same year as Hillsborough, was it? No. Yeah.
They came out that year. There you go.
Tragedy was in the summer. So there was three big psyops. So we had a Navy one with the Marchioness the summer of 89. Hillsborough in the May, the spring of 89.
What is that? I don't know that better then.
Could be at Christmas of 88.
What is
Which
that?
Which one? Don't you know?
The Marchioness.
A pleasure boat down the River Thames that was carrying party people. Of a certain sort of quite well-off party people, quite posh party people, actually, was run over by O'Bells. By the old cockneys, you know? They ran over the posh people. This was the analogy that I came to in looking at that one.
Hang on, what ran over them? I just got O'Bells.
A ship called the O'Bells, called the O'Bells, driven by... husband's father. That's a lot to take in, isn't it? All in one go.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd never heard of that.
It resulted in the drowning of 51 people. Fucking pushed under by the dredger, Bow Bell. Bonked it. So, just looking at...
Cutting out a bit of the
Yeah, there was some quite big events that 1889 variety. So, I was thinking if you could call the Marchioness a naval one, that would be the Navy psyops. And then the Hillsborough was the sports one. And then Lockerbie was
political one.
Because
it was blamed on Libya, wasn't it? It was blamed on Gaddafi.
Oh, yes.
And then there was a kind of official conspiracy theory that had something to do with the CIA, but I can't remember what it was.
But to this day, in the newspaper today, in the Sun, I think I saw on the headline was a deathbed confession about it, you know, still being referenced.
Yeah, yeah.
It goes on, you know, that's who did it, you know. Yeah, they're always pointing the finger somewhere else, you know.
Yeah.
Keeping it real, you know. Yeah. When it really, there was a guy, you know, but the thing is, he was, didn't he apparently serve time in prison, then he apparently got cancer and he was released.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He went back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then he was living off benefits and he had to be taken home because they get better cancer care than they do in this country. And, oh, every angle was spun.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean,
human rights, court.
How was this pawn played? You know, this guy was he was just a front man. He didn't have to go through with it, or was he a front man that just fucking stayed locked up somewhere?
He probably signed an official secrets act fucking 6 months before anything to do with a plane or anything happened, and that was it. It's just been, you know, he's been parceled around doing fucking odd jobs, fucking the rich people fucking working in places. You don't know. You'd be fucking. Yeah. All we know is what they tell us on telly. So they tell, you know, how can you expect the stories to be true? I mean, what people don't believe, what don't understand is we used to see things on the telly like Jimmy Savile shaking hands with the Yorkshire Ripper with Frank Bruno in the background. You know what I mean? And when you realise that, you go, oh my God, you know, Jimmy Savile talking about sneaking young girls into palaces and weird things. It's beyond a joke. It's a dance. It's horrible to watch.
And I said to the Duke of Edinburgh, I said, oh, and he went, oh, she's nice, isn't he? I said, yeah, she is, yeah. And that was the best day. I said to her parents, I'll take her in. And that was weird, that clip.
That was what Jimmy Savile was saying.
Yeah, he was talking, he was on Parkinson, and he was talking about one of the best days he had when he took a young girl in to meet the Duke of Edinburgh. Yeah.
And that's what I mean. It's I'm not talking about what happened or anything like that, just the things that are said on telly or TV. It's the BBC is the bell booking candle. They cast spells on everyone. That's how they started out, weren't they? Tricking people into joining the army. You know?
Bell, a book and a candle.
Yeah, well, does the British Broadcasting Corporation. So we dropped it a level there, didn't we, by saying Jimmy Savile. But yeah, nevertheless,
I could tell a story then here. Should I tell that story about me waiting there at the crossroads, me waiting at the station there? At the age of kind of 20. I just turned 20, I think. But I looked pretty young for my age. And I was sitting there in the station, and I'd missed my bus. So the next bus was like 7 in the morning and it was midnight or 1 o'clock or something. It was fucking cold as well. And this guy came over and started offering me a cigarette and we started talking and he's saying, you don't have to stay here, you know, there's a cheap place where you can bed down. It's called Tent City. It only costs £1 a night. And I can give you a lift if you like, you know. And it was so cold and I wasn't really thinking, you know, fuck it, get out of here anyway. Okay, all right. And get in this car with him, you know, and after a while I realised, he's sort of going in circles, you know, and he's asking me weird questions like where I'm coming from, where I'm going to, what I want, all these things. It's a bit weird, you know. I start thinking there's no Tent City, is there? Look at this guy, and he's a really big guy. He's got big hands and the fucking posh car. And I'm thinking, I wasn't thinking straight here. And I'm like, what am I doing? I think I better get out of here. And he's saying to me, what do you want to do then? Where are you going? And I start saying, you know, I came from here and people know I'm going here and I'm meeting people here and I've got a family because he's picking up runaways, isn't he? Or something like this, you know. He's saying, oh, do you want to go? What do you want to do? Where are you going to? Where are you going? I said, I'm going to Calais to meet this guy because I'm thinking of moving to Germany and playing in a band there. Oh, you're playing in a band? You want to play in a band? You want to be a pop star? You know, I don't know. Might, if it's, you know, if it happens, it happens. And he said, well, pop star, that's no problem. You know, Mark Almond, he's one of ours. And, you know, the thing was, this guy, when I asked him, what do you do? He said, well, I'm a procurer. I get things for people, rich people, sorts of rich people, Arabs. I don't know, he mentioned Arabs. It was the 80s. And, you know, they need a car, nice car like this. I get them a nice car. They need drugs. I get them drugs. They need girls. I get them girls. They need boys. Boys. Dot. And he said to me, we can arrange this for you. What do you want? We can arrange this for you and everything. And eventually, and I said to him, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And he, then he realized he'd been wasting his time with me. He slammed the brakes on and said, get out. I got out fast. You know? And, you know, he was looking for a runaway. That's what he was looking for. He was looking for someone who'd got no fucking family, just ran away from their family and, you know, didn't know what they were going to do and stuck in fucking London. What are you going to do now? It happens, you know. And you get picked up and brought to a place. I mean, this is the story that I got from someone else. I can't confirm that, right? The story I got from someone else is goes away and he says, oh, shit, Tent City isn't there anymore. But I know another place you can stay. And he brings you to a house and there are loads of other people your age and they've all got drugs and stuff. Right? What are you going to do? There's nowhere else to go. So you hang around there 3, 4, 5 days. And then a guy comes back and says, what are you doing? Gave you a place for a night, you're still here, it's 5 nights, you know. How much money you owe me? You've been taking my drugs, you've been eating my food, you've been staying in my flat. You owe me money, you owe me, you know, £1,000. What are you going to do? Got any money? Of course you haven't got any money. You want a job? You need a job. I've got a job for you. You want to be a pop star? Mark Almond, he's one of ours.
Yeah, a little bit,
Absolutely fucking I would say it's like, you know, you walk down the crossroads and meet the devil, you know. So that was the first kind of opportunity I had to join the club, right? And it's only my story, you can believe it or not believe it, but it happened. And the other one was later when I started a band here and I put an advert in. It was a good advert. They said, we're looking for people from the great free from the great COD stereotype. Help us produce a powerful rhythmic music here. I got loads of people. It was really good. And amongst them, I got some English guy, you know, who was like, I often wonder if he had, how much he would might have had links to, because he actually drove for the military after all this. But this guy turned up, this guy in his 40s, and really kind of like worked us and kind of took us over, really, yeah? When I found out what he was like, that he was a liar, you know, and he was morally kind of, he would lie, you know? You know, I caught him lying, and then he turned into this snake, oh, the things I've done for you, and, you know, in a real fight, and so I split, right? And we produced this band called the Trash Groove Girls. We made the music, we found the girls, we put it together, typical kind of producer band thing, you know? And he really knew how to sell this stuff. He'd been around London, he knew how it worked. And he plugged it in really quick, yeah? And then years later, you know, that was the thing, because he said, like, don't mess around with the girls. We play a straight game here, yeah? And it starts fucking the keyboarder. So I was like, well, what are you doing? You said straight game. And then that's when he got really angry instead of maybe reassuring me or something, you know? And years later, and this band, they made a couple of albums. They went to New York. They had a pretty good time for a while. Trash Groove Girls, they're called. You'll find them on YouTube. And years later, I met one of them. And she said to me, you know, especially with this kind of meeting, but this was what this guy was like. He slept with all of them, yeah? And I've got the German one, Eingeölt. I mean, they had to be oiled down. He would oil them down. They had to be naked, and he would oil them down before they went on play. That was all part of getting the tension going. This guy was like, and the fucking rock scene was full of those sort of people. It attracted those kind of people. Those sort of people who like young people, you know? You
see what I mean? Well, it's funny. Well, I mean, it's quite nice to get oiled. Do you know what I mean? If that was all it was, if that was the only thing that he was getting off on, I mean, that reminds me of Don Reavy with the Leeds squad. He had him and a couple of blokes used to massage them on a daily basis. They'd be naked lying there on the bench, and they'd just really throw it into it.
Yeah, what she said is, she said that in itself, there was nothing, it was the weird way that she thought she had to kind of do it, that she went along with it, that it happened, you know?
Yeah, weird. Yeah.
He did have a power over. I know he did. I mean, when they came, we got all this weird, this nice-looking studio, and we were doing it on a wing and a prayer, but from outside, it looked pretty good, you know? And there's these two fucking English guys, this older English guy and this younger English guy, and she thinks, yeah, she's going to produce something that's going to go big time, you know? It looks good. And she's doing anything we tell her. And he's writing all these texts, right? And we wrote, like I said, what we did is we get The Face, which was the magazine at the time, just cut the fucking words up, like, you know, Bowie and William Burroughs, and move them around. You know, I'm a sugar pink go-go baby and all this stuff, you know. And you make a text out of it, and you just put a simple sort of bass line on with the keyboard, you know, some effects. Poof, voila, yeah. And she's singing these songs. She sang these songs. She likes this great chance, and she does anything. She'd do anything we say. And then he wrote this song, and the lyrics were, I want to be fucked, I want to be fucked, I want to be fucked by you. Those sort of lyrics, right? So you can't fucking give it back. You say, yeah, she'll sing them. I said, she won't. Of course she will. She'll sing anything I give her. And she sang them. She didn't blink an eyelid.
Yeah. But.
right? Because that's the kind of power, you know, it's like they're going to go along with it and think, this is, yeah, she's going to be famous.
I'll make you a star, yeah.
She got out and she still has a band here, still makes music, and she's married an artist, and she says she's okay, but you know, it makes them stronger. They, oh, that's the scene, that's the way it is. As soon as they hit 20, he moved on, you know.
Oh, Morecambe and Wise. Yeah, I'll stop it. Yeah, I see the leg up at the end. Yeah, no, don't be.
Yeah, so I don't know how far it goes. I don't know how far it goes up to this elite stuff and this satanic stuff and this really, really, really gory stuff. I don't know about that. You know? But that's the level I've encountered, that sort of kind of abuse or that kind of, whatever you want to call it, I don't know, sexuality.
I mean, certainly on the level of that manager thing, all that was fairly light. That is the story, but it's indicative of human nature, isn't it? In that environment, how things can be controlled, management, you know.
Well, I wanted to say that earlier. Sorry, but I was having problems with my mic when John was saying that he doubts that a football game can be controlled. I was going to say, just tell him to have a look into Juventus's recent history. You know, I mean, they were relegated for cheating and setting match games and, you know, all these different things.
John almost scornfully said, anyone who thinks that they can fix a football match to be, say, 3-1.
Yeah, he's attaching himself to it, don't worry.
I was saying it, and I said, I think I'm naive if you think otherwise, but... of course it can be done. Do you remember there was that week that the record, British record lottery win is 66 million? And the week that happened, everyone was talking about it. Oh, yeah, and it was shared between two people.
3 each.
Exactly. Beautiful.
MM.
So, yeah, yeah. And do you know how many, what's the record number of PSYOP deaths in a school shooting in the US?
Oh, is it?
To rush you. I'm going to have to rush you. Give me an answer.
33.
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. It's in 2005 at the, I think it's 2005. Where was it? That's Tech State
College.
Virginia Tech, is that right? Yeah, it's 33, man. It is. Fuck, it is. The record number of deaths in an American school shooting PSYOP. What was the 33 that got us to that?
Don't know. Did they make the guns in Virginia? Is that where they... Did they make the guns there as well? Well, I don't know. Anyway. We love the numbers. They're great. They work. I always say 9 divided by 11 is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and with all the kind of connotations between Star Wars and September the 11th, it's just getting better and better. Literally, I can't wait for the new Star Wars, because apparently they're revamping it, and they know the power of myth, so let's see if they can capture lightning in a bottle again.
Oh man, I haven't seen Star Wars since about 1977, but man, that was great.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's how it is. You just revert back to being a child. Do we grow up? Don't think we do. We just get a little bit more accustomed to the advertising.
I was already jaded by the time Star Wars came out, I think.
Yeah, I was jaded by the time Jurassic Park came out. I mean, much as the dinosaurs being fake was old, was not any, in anyone's sort of vocabulary much. I was very, you know, I was like, oh, fuck it, I'm mainstream Hollywood bullshit, you know. I just hated it, you know. I thought, nah, I'm not falling for that. I wasn't. Enjoyed the film. Jump. I enjoyed the.
I remember watching it in the cinema. It made me jump. I was like, ooh.
It's like you're saying about.
I wasn't walking home, you know, with my eye open for raptors.
If you enter, fucking hell. You enter the, if you suspend your disbelief, you can get into these things, you know, and they're good movies. They're great movies. That's the thing, isn't it? It's the power of them. Schindler's List, you know. Spielberg, a powerful movie maker, you know.
Well, like I say, this most recent one I watched called Immortal Engines, the Earth's crust has been displaced. It's all ended up as one big continent. Cities have been raised onto, you know, you can call them like giant tracks. But they roam across this vast land. You know, literally swallowing other smaller cities, towns, mining cities, everything's mobile. And they call them, the people who don't like being on the cities, the tractionists. Yeah, they're against, you know, the movement of the, you know, these big cities on wheels. But yeah, you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. But yeah, even
well, yeah, I mean, really, of course, but, you're talking about fantasy. So I mean, that's perhaps
yeah. How does well, that they've incorporated, a bit of a modern day style in it with the Earth crust, displacement and all that stuff. Because we've seen that used in the film 2012. That was the main culture.
Yeah, but it's only normal dystopia, isn't it? That the world kind of is fucked up and everything's going to be.
Yeah, stupid idiots. But there you go. You know, it's another crazy theory. It's only a theory, though. You know, people do take them on board to be real, and the effect of the modern day, evolution, dinosaurs, maybe they don't affect them that much, but they all pinpoint to, being on this spinning ball, flying through space and not in charge. But we know it's contrary to that. Like I said, I like the analogy of the ape, gullible apes waking up to the moon because
Anyway, yeah. It's not good.
You always do that. Anyway, yeah. And you've got to tell a joke now.
Oh, God. No, I just...
Okay, everybody. Why is 6 afraid of 7? Because 7, 8, 9. Ha-ha.
Well done, Matty. I like your joke. I like Matty's joke.
That's a good one. That's for teaching kids English over here.
You could tell a lot about someone by their favourite joke. You know, you could say, go on then, tell us, and it's quite nice that you could get their humour, and by getting their humour, you could perhaps, you could instantly like someone through their joke, can't you, maybe?
Yeah, humour and swearing, both very kind of communicative devices, in a way, aren't they? I think they're, both of them, it's a way of saying, looking for common ground,
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ground, yeah.
The third stroke. Have I gone deaf?
No.
Right, that's fine. Tom, what was you saying? And you just drifted off, man.
No, I did I? I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm like, I'm a few things going on here. I
Type old towers.
I've got I'm looking for a harmonica that I put down somewhere earlier. That's what I'm doing. Right? And so I am drifting off. I'm all over the place trying to find this harmonica. The one I wanted.
What key is it in?
E, the one that I'm looking for. I just found an E, but I can't find a C. Anyway, not to worry. Is it? I wonder.
So we're going to get a song anyway.
Well, I was gonna give a blast or something. I thought the thing is, I start doing it, I think I'm shit. It sounds rubbish. It's all watery and horrible with the music always, you know. So what do you play, you know?
You should just be the minstrel.
Sounds like one of those sort of vamping style that you sort of talk over, yeah. Very light, one of those.
Yeah. Well, like I say, right, you just sing little ditties about what we've been talking about.
I need a tender touch. I need a tender touch. If you want a piece of me... Oh, sorry, I'm not going to sing that now.
Hey, that's a cool hook, man. Keep the hook. That's cool. Build that up. That's a good one.
Oh, no, it is.
That's a good one, yeah.
That is from a song of mine.
Is it? Oh, it's good. It's good.
Yeah. Cause I've been sold out flat by stone cold bitches. I've been battered and bruised by slags, eggs and witches. I've been stretched and I've been bitten by 20 quid holes. There's a taste in my mouth. I don't want it anymore.
Give me 6 weeks, an Alka-Seltzer, and maybe I can hit the note.
Did I ever tell you, Denny? I told Tom that there's one word that I use quite a lot, the German word that I use quite a lot, which is guile. Yeah, and guile just means it's great, it's really good, but it also means it's kind of sexy.
That's a good word, then. Guile. Did you think that was guile? I've got
that
really.
Are
you going to say that? Oh, you're a top man. I like your style with guile. Your guile style. Style and guile. You see, guile, of course, is skill, and in English is, of course, a not a negative word.
No, that's necessarily. It has a little bit of that as well. That's why, you know, I think it's probably because being a musician, it can describe certain instruments or amplifiers, you know. They're kind of, they're clever, yeah, they're clever, and they're sexy as well.
yeah, great, yeah. Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. But yes, this is. It'd be good to sort of do a song about, you know, that we talk about into song, you know. And have you ever thought about that? I mean, you have a bit. I mean, you know, I've heard some of your lyrics, I think, and they, you know, they do talk to interesting things.
One song there, you know, don't believe in news, don't believe in them, don't believe in anything that they want to send.
Yeah.
Don't believe in common. Don't believe in views. Don't believe in anything that they leave in you. Yeah, it's all pretty. That's pretty on the button, you know. Don't believe in the media. Don't believe in their tools. They lie so often and they lie like fools. Don't believe in the meaning that they give to me. Seems so out of date, so off key. Don't believe in the beat no more. Don't believe in a lie. Oh, all you ever see is Maine. So Maine, Main Street's all. Don't believe in the Maine. Believe those things find a role to play alone, pretending that they rail your soul. So it goes on like that, yeah. So, you know, that's pretty clear. That line that I like so much, don't believe in compass, don't believe in signs that cross their stage, like that.
Well, guile, what can I say?
I just got to record it.
Yeah, no, that's good. Good lyric, yeah. And true to your, yes. You've already put it into song, yeah, yeah. True to yourself, really. Good.
That was a
song like it's called Real Power, and it's like, you know, you're under their control every second, every hour of Real Power, and you know.
Yeah.
And you could sort of tell a whole load of home truths that people would never believe. You think you believe what happened in the war or, you know, 9/11. It's over your head, you know. You could say all these sort of lyrics and make a really good rocking song, maybe.
Yeah, you ain't ready for the truth.
You're not gonna get any listeners if it was direct. You know, we talked about this before, haven't we?
No, you got to make it you've got to give it some sort of mystique. You know, you use quotes. You've got to give it some sort of, if you want to, you know.
Yes,
sort of vagary to even.
Absolutely, and in a way, yeah, make it. And in that manner, it would be, yeah, it'd have like, yes, you can't do it directly, we understand, necessarily. And you can, but I'm not sure it's going to, you know, be a type thing or something, you know. And in England, they're going mental.
I don't think so.
No, it's,
I go on, pick another conspiracy.
Pick a conspiracy. All right, yes. This is Christmas. Pick a conspiracy time.
Might as well.
I want to talk about anything else you don't know about Matty from recent English history? Are you comfortable with Dunblane?
No, what's Dunblane?
Dunblane, yeah, because you're expat. Well, you weren't here in 1996?
No. Nope.
Well, you've been there 30 years, though, so you were somewhere close.
1996, yeah, I was here. I was here in
You were. That's only 22 years ago.
Yep.
I'm being thick momentarily, I hope. You know, it's the short term. Dunblane was a school shooting. It was the English school shooting. When I say English, that's wrong. It was a British event. It was a Scottish event, if we're going to talk. It was in Dunblane, Scotland, in 1996. And absolute shocker, because, I mean, it's English, and we've only ever had one school shooting, and we've only in, and it changed the laws, you know, in one. And a guy called Thomas Mayer was another Thomas who killed Joe Cox, but this was recently, but this was Thomas Mann, I think, was it Thomas Mann? He was linked with the Masons, and 16 children on in a classroom, Dunblane School, little town, you know, so just hilly as you go up, that's quite north, isn't it? It's quite a long way up Scotland.
I don't know, to look at them, eh?
Yeah, so yes, that was a massive event, and it was like the English school shooting. You got any doubt that was a staged event yourself, or had you not heard of it?
No, I wouldn't have been watching the news at all then. Certainly not the English news, particularly. No. Doing a lot of theatre then. So.
I mean, if it had been a German event, you'd probably remember it. It would be all over, it would be in your face, but. Yeah, absolutely.
But that was a period. I didn't watch the TV. I got rid of the. I didn't have TVs. Didn't watch them. I managed to avoid the Yugoslavian war more or less.
If you, shows you that if you're in a different country, you're getting different information. You know, your whole perspective's different, isn't it? Yeah, you couldn't have avoided it if you were living in England. You know what I mean? Regardless of whether you watch telly or listen to the radio, because everyone was talking about it. But, they didn't in Germany. It was an English thing. I said it again. It's a British thing.
So go on.
It was very. Wow. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It was. You were doing theatre and that. Cool.
Yeah. I was going through that on the wing and the prayer. So I did do my homework.
Well, you couldn't have been there. That you've been there about six years then, or 8 years? 8 years. Oh, so you must have been fluent. Then really,
yeah, no, my German was fine, yeah. No, I had to kind of brush up on my musicianship, you know, there was like a much higher level than I was used to,
good discipline, I guess, yeah. It's a properly, I love theatres for acoustics sometimes, actually. You like going on?
We went up at Durban, what was it, Dunfermline?
Oh, Dunblane. Are you interested in that? Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Well, I don't forget what I've talked about on audio, but I'm just putting together a little video actually about Bob Geldof foreshadowing Dunblane in that I Don't Like Mondays video from 1979. So we see that in 1979 there's a song about a school shooting in America, Bob Geldof song, and. It has been called. It was a girl, a lady. What was her name? Belinda? No. Might come to me without looking it up. But she was Brenda Spencer, a headmaster and a caretaker, I think we'd call them. I don't think we call them that in the States. But it was in the Cleveland Elementary School in San Diego, California. And that was a sort of quirky little 1979 event. But that Bob Geldof wrote a song about, you know, I Don't Like Mondays. This is what this Brenda Spencer said, apparently, you know, who's quoted. And in that video for I Don't Like Mondays, retrospectively, we can see that it's alluding to, it seems pretty clear, it's alluding to that one British school shooting that in Dunblane, because it's a little sort of house on a hill we see in that video, and then it sort of zooms in kind of ominously, and then there's these zombie children in it. And it's... why that for a school shooting? And children weren't killed. A couple were injured, but a few were injured, but not even badly, I don't think, particularly. So why the zombie children, I don't quite know, in a song about a school shooting. But they were in this school classroom in this hill, but there was the same ratio of boys and girls as there was at Dunblane in that video.
In the video?
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly the same amount of children, 16 in this video, and then the same amount of girls and boys. The reason I bring it up, perhaps, is just to sort of show how far in advance that was being planned. Because it's 1979 when that song was a hit in the summer, number one in 30 different countries. Yeah,
interesting. Were there any examples of that school shooting phenomenon before this? I don't like Mondays.
Well, this Brenda Spencer shooting in San Diego, this Cleveland Elementary School, we could perhaps see that perhaps now that we know that song and foreshadowed Dunn Lane, that perhaps that was a psyop, you know, this Cleveland Elementary one. It looks like one anyway. There's been plenty of times guns have gone off at schools, you know, over time, going back decades, centuries, you know. But a program of school shootings in the psyop capacity seems to be relatively recent to me, I think, maybe. So that we could trace it back. They called Brenda Spencer the grandmother of school shooters, school shootings. School shootings, said the police officer.
Okay, yeah. so that is then the official sort of, I mean, that's almost enough.
Giving us that, in 1979, what he says from that event. But, yeah, you're not sure there was much more. The amount of casualties in school shootings, really, because remember, no children died in that Cleveland Elementary one, but it was the first time it was all over the papers, and I did know about it. And Bob Geldof had this song, and we all got to know about that. Well,
certainly it would tie into Dirty Harry, wouldn't it? When was Dirty Harry?
76, I think. Yeah, that guy jumps, that freak jumps on that school bus, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, it's basically it's this freak who goes around just sniping at people and killing people.
Children's always going to be a real pull, isn't it? You know, one of the good powerful, the image of someone attacking the children at school, you know, it's an obvious one in a way, isn't it, for the whole thing. Anyway, for drama alone, let alone for manipulating sort of agendas that you've got coming up. But it'd be a good film anyway without that, when it's not really, in a sense.
That was a strange film for me. Clint Eastwood was this, you know, the hero with no name in all the spaghetti western movies. And all of a sudden now he's kind of like working as this official rogue element for the state. And what's he doing? He's chasing a fucking baddie who looks like me.
He's a policeman, man. He's a fucking policeman first and foremost.
But the baddie's the teenager with long hair, you know?
Yeah.
Counterculture sort of figure. And he's evil. He's the evil guy. And all of a sudden, you know, the hero you've grown up with is you know? It was a weird film.
He got that guy to beat him up, didn't he, as well? He got to punch lights out. You know, yeah, this fucking low life, knocking the life out of the fucking 60s. No, you long-haired fucker. Punch every punch that Clint Eastwood of the police, the cool dude, who was everyone thought was cool, punched the life out of the 60s. Yeah, very good. I like it.
What's his famous phrase? You're feeling lucky, punk, isn't it? He says punk, doesn't he?
He does, in 1976. He does, doesn't he? And that was the year of punk rock.
So fuck you, Clint.
That was on the button, that script of the Times. So Clint Eastwood, school children on a school bus. It's powerful anyway. It's going to get things done, isn't it? That with your children at schools and shooting. We know. Well, that's why they've done it. You know, so that was 76. So also in 76, incidentally, good point, actually, was a film called Carrie, where a schoolgirl, a sort of oddball schoolgirl with long hair, long sort of red hair, living alone with a sort of, in a way, a sort of a controlling mother in some, or some sort of, in a weird mother.
It's very much like a programming for girls there.
Yeah, there you go. She unleashes terror on the high school prom with her telekinetic powers, you know. So she does it psychologically or sort of remotely, you know. So isn't that possibly very good foreshadowing for...
Always reminds me of the Cinderella story, the night of the ball, the big prom, the blood, obviously the blood, because they slip the glass slipper and cuts the woman. And really, we know that really the ugly sisters are on the period. That's why the blood, you know, in the old tale, that's why the young girl is, you know, wanted, because she's not on a period yet. But yeah, even in the Disney one, it makes the feet bleed. So Carrie's very similar to, you know, like Cinderella, these mad delusions and all that. But you can see how it's just taken there. But when you're talking about that, you're also talking about when you're saying that a woman, you know, a girl's changing menstrual cycles and things like that, and the physicality of, our brain changes and stuff and the reaction. It's there. Yeah, it was perfect programming for loads. And you got this remnants now of zombies and people being into zombie films and vampires. And you can see where that sinister side turned cool.
If you put up a picture of Brenda Spencer from the 79, this school shooting that was made famous by in England by the Geldof song, it looks like Sissy Spacek in Sissy Spacek. It really does. And she lived alone with her father, this Brenda Spencer, in a weird sort of situation, shot from across the street. You know, she lived alone with her father. I mean, Carrie, it was alone with her mother, but it was this kind of oddball character thing, and there was this long hair, and she wore shades. Brenda Spencer wore shades at her. A bit showbiz. It did seem a bit Hollywood, but weirdly. So it was perfect. You could say it was good programming for that. She looked a bit like Carrie. She did. That was 76. Clint Eastwood in 76, saying punk.
When she's in the shower scene, she basically gets her period in the shower scene. You know, there's just so much fucking blood. It's like, what did he want to do? A Stanley Kubrick scene from The Shining or something. It's absurd.
Hitchcock.
Psycho. I haven't seen Carrie, not all the way through. I can't even tell you that much about it, other than I just thought the other day, she looks like, because it's a cultural iconic film in a way, I knew it.
I remember because that was at the time we used to go to the cinema every week. There was nothing else to do. Every Friday you went to the cinema, yeah? And you just saw whatever was on. There was only one film on anyway. You know, sometimes they had two films, one after the other, sort of support film, you know, B film, you know. But you just went in, and you know, it used to run never endingly. So you'd go in, and sometimes you'd go in halfway through. You'd watch the second half, and then there'd be a break, and you'd watch the first half, there was this phrase that came in. It was like, oh, this is where we came in. And then, and then you'd go out. And then you'd see all the film, but you'd seen it from the middle to the middle sort of thing. Yeah? And I remember seeing Carrie. And Carrie was the first film I remember, at least, even scary film or horror film, that, you know, did the thing at the end, you know. So the last scene, you know, she comes back. And I remember, for some reason, that film, we didn't talk about it so much as we talk about the others, because it shocked us so much at the end that we had a kind of respect for it and didn't analyse it very well, if you know what I mean. We didn't talk about it that much. It was a shocker, but it was a shocker, definitely, for me. I don't know. How old? 76? I'd be 14.
And at that age, it's like, really, yeah, that stuff's powerful. You know, just getting you don't really know what it's about exactly, but it's powerful, goes in, and you know, taking it in. I quite like this.
With the message, don't be nasty to girls in puberty, be careful.
I don't know what else to do. I've got to watch it now, haven't I, probably at some point. I've talked about it, but I mentioned it. I thought it was interesting with this connection to Brenda Spencer and the history of school shootings. And the another thing I noticed was entry school, San Diego, California. And then 10 years later to the month, in 89, at Cleveland Elementary School in California, I think it's Stockton, was the biggest school shooting to date, I think, the really big one. To the month, it was January 12th to the 27th or something. It was pretty, Cleveland Elementary, the same name school. You know, they were both at a Cleveland Elementary School. But yeah, there was a lot of people called it the Stockton one. So you can see how that sort of, you can see a build up there, a thematic thing that we see in PsyOps. But they do like to, there's a kind of link sometimes with these things. Ends running over people during sort of down from Rue d'Anglais going down various streets around the world. Thematic PsyOpery. The school shooting ones was, Stockton, and then so they go through the years. You've got, I said, there's 10 years from 79, that was 89, and then Columbine, I mean, was that 96, 95? Have I got that totally wrong? 99? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's 99 because The Matrix was before it, wasn't it? The Matrix was 98 on that.
There you go.
And also, yeah, Heather's another film, you know, stuff like that. But seeing as we're just on 911, let me say one sec. In Die Hard 3, which is the one with Samuel L. Jackson. It starts off with an explosion, which is very similar to the Boston bomb. Also in that one is talk about gold being moved, and we heard that being mentioned in the stories to do with the towers falling. And in Die Hard 4, there's a scene which is remarkably similar to the Boston bombing, you know, the trying to get away for the chase that you see on the news. Very similar to that, and that was obviously a number of years before it happened as well. So there you go. Always, there's always a mirror image somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? 33 years in advance. Yeah, the old.
What happens when your eyes go to sleep and you just watch, you know, you forget you're just watching a film, and then it dawns on you years later.
The Grand Plan is quite a ludicrous monstrosity, but quite magnificent.
Well, I don't know how he managed this. That must have come down the chimney. But, yeah, Mr. Fakeologist is in him. So, if he is listening, Merry Christmas, mate.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Ab.
Yes, everyone's feeling a bit Christmassy in England here. It's a Friday. It's the same in States, isn't it? And people feels like the weekend, and then it's Christmas almost. Great. I like it when it falls on a Tuesday.
Nice time for family to visit as well. They've got the weekend just before a quiet Christmas to themselves. So, cool.
Yeah. And John was a bit cynical about, Mr. Le Bon was a bit cynical earlier about Christmas, saying he didn't have to buy presents for anyone, and he's in a lucky position. Great. And he feels like free of it, and he doesn't have to sort of mix in with the crowd, you know. But about earlier, aren't we? You might as well just join the flock here and just swoop down and enjoy it. You know, this is the good bit of civilization, in a sense. Don't you know? You know what I mean? If it was a benevolent control structure, you know what I mean? Maybe it is. You'd still have a Christmas. You know what I mean?
Cromwell.
You'd have a celebration where you give presents. You don't have to, you know, fall for everything that goes along with it.
Yeah, didn't Cromwell get rid of Christmas? The Puritans got rid of Christmas, you know. Another one of those things. The people didn't like it. They got the king back, for Christ's sake. You know. Or at least somebody didn't like it. It didn't work, did it? Same in Russia. It didn't work.
That's the magic of Christmas, that matter.
Well, you know, the Indians and the Chinese, they've got loads of all sorts of days, you know?
Yeah, I mean, fuck's sake, it's just a fucking excuse. Like, if I was in another culture and it was on another day, I'd be totally happy to enter into the spirit of it then, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You're in China, you do their holidays, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's a natural thing. Enjoy it. That's nice part of life. There's nothing wrong with that, I don't know.
Well, it's a natural thing in celebrating and bringing in symbols that are going to represent that. This is the winter, but there will be summer coming again soon. So obviously you can understand why they were, you know, transporting plants and fruit, and why people got bits of fruit at this time of the year, because it'd say, look, they are still being grown. All right, they're 800 miles away and this took ages to get here. That's the significance and the gift. But nevertheless, you know. You can see why the ritual's carried on. It does happen in colder climates more than the hotter ones, so maybe it's just counted proximity where. Yeah, maybe it's just because John's not part of the nice part of the plane. Yeah, I don't know.
Days are getting longer, man. The days are getting longer now.
Yeah, man.
I like it. When you live in England, you fucking notice it and you appreciate it. You know what I mean? It's lovely in the sun.
Every day, yeah. As it, you know, in Europe. Every day is going to get, it might get colder, but every day is going to get a little bit lighter. And that's probably the reason it works here, and it's harder to do in summer.
Well, at 8:20 today, this morning, it was electric blue, the sky.
Beautiful.
Gorgeous. So that's it now. It should be a different colour tomorrow.
One of the most spectacular things I've ever seen, and it sounds so, perhaps an 8-year-old girl. But was a rainbow in a sky so beautifully blue that panorama standing in front of me. I was on a hill. It's my location, I think, as well. But beautiful.
You were on a beautiful hill. Sky.
Vivid, yeah, the most vivid rainbow. I was in the middle of an estate in a place called Six Mile Bottom area in this kind of part of a valley, but it's as far as the Fenland of East Anglia goes, it almost feels like it there, you know. It's on a raised bit, and you're above everything, you're looking over a good vantage point, and there's a sky. Yeah, anyway, sorry. Yeah. I'm talking. Get back to something fakeologist related, Tom. terrible habit. Yeah. He's gone. He's fucked off. What's he doing? Someone said hello and he's gone.
Ab's gone.
Yeah. He was here. What's he doing? I suppose he might be at work. Perhaps he's playing his chemtrails, isn't he?
Ab's gone, dude.
Exactamente.
If Matt's going to come out of his bullshit jokes, I can say it the fuck I want.
Absolutely.
No, it's not a bullshit joke. Cool. Absconded is a very appropriate and astute.
No, you're missing it. I'm doing the major trope that the Germans don't have a sense of humour.
But he's English, isn't he? You can fucking tell.
No, he's not. No, he's over half German. How old are you, Matt?
Yeah, you fucking look fat.
I've been here longer than I was in English.
There you go. Fucking German. Now you, son. Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Matty?
I like it, Adam.
No, I've had that. I came over once as well with my daughter.
Wow.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
There you go. I've got his plug-in, so he don't need to jump in. Boom.
Yeah, when I came over with my daughter and I met an old school friend and she had some kids too and these kids going on when they found out that we were from Germany, it's like Bonham Blitzen Abtunk fucking hell, they still read those comics.
What, the shooting reindeer comics?
Yeah, well, you know, no, where they're killing Germans basically.
Yeah, man. I mean, we had this thing called the war, yeah, and it was big. And we still do well Remembrance Day. I'm just for the sake of the audio.
But I have no sense of humour anymore, so I have to say these things now.
I've heard it was a pretty big thing as well. I think there's a couple of books on it.
Yes, there is a couple of books on that war, actually. Yeah, there's a very good one called, I can't remember. But, things like it's interesting talking to you, your perspective over there in Germany, though, Matty. We were talking the other night. It was very interesting when you talked about the bomb cities of various, like Munich. You were talking about, and they just rebuilt. It was good for Germany, wasn't it?
Well, you could say that. Yeah,
it looks beautiful now, and it's well, and it runs well.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying, kind of thing?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You know, I don't know what else we were saying, but yeah, even if it's.
You mentioned Germany having a clear conscience because they paid for it.
The Queen's German, isn't she? So, you know, come over, it's a perfect cover. You come over to England, right? The Germans come over to England. And then you say you're English. And then, you're Windsor. You see, you bomb the shit out of Germany, and then you can rebuild it. And that's when you make, you solidify your power then, don't you? You rebuild it, make a whole load of money, load of power.
What about the wacky Dutch?
We're getting too
close. They're all doing it. They're all on it. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, are they just in the wacky? Are they just in charge of New York, New Amsterdam? Is that why the president's orange? Trumpa Lumpa.
Nice narrative.
Old orange.
Trumpa Lumpa.
Yeah, they were orange, weren't they? So we got a super Trumpa Lumpa in power in America. Yeah, it must be. They're in charge of America.
What you were mixing up was what I used to say to German people. I used to say, you know, you should be, you can jump on that. You can be kind of like, sort of proud of the fact, in a way, that Germany owned up to its shit and pays for it. Yeah, so it owned up to, you know, the Russians and the Japanese, they look at it and like everyone was playing Risiko anyway. It was the clash of the empires, really. Yeah. But, you know, okay, the Germans were destroyed. They put up their hands. They said, yeah, we built all this. We did all this shit. And so it's a kind of therapeutic sort of thing. It's strange that then Germany ends up being such a popular country. It's supposed to be, you know, I keep hearing these stats saying it's the most popular country in the world now, you know. Everybody wants to go to Germany. I think it's probably because they're good losers or something, and they got on with the job anyway, and then they picked them up
themselves up by the big, oh, that's the way it appears, you know, this, you know, strange, but there is industry still here, it still works, it still functions, you know, they don't seem to be as...
Well, that's got to be that fundamental guilt then, that they've had fucking talk to them. Yeah. I mean, even though they've owned up to it and bought it, there's still that fundamental guilt, because if they were guilt-free and they had a, you know...
They're not
guilt-free. Literally,
they're not guilt-free. They've got a couple of colonies. They had these.
No, that's what I mean. It's written down. It's in paper. So, you know, there you go. They've admitted to it.
They've still got to look at their colonial background a little bit there. You know, it would have been better if they left themselves out of that. But yeah, you know, the Japanese, like I say, the Japanese are still in denial, and the English and the Americans haven't even got to that stage.
It's like the Holocaust, a real taboo to talk about, Matty. Could you walk into a room and say it's absolute bullshit, No,
it would be a visceral, I've already tried it out, I tried it out on my wife, first of all, and I could do that gently, but she says it's a visceral theme. I mean, she's okay with it now, but it's a visceral theme, even just talking about the theme, they feel it, yeah?
You would do, it's like, oh my God, it's guilt, it's a deep set, you know, that would be really sort of, yeah.
Yeah, right. And, you know, what were you also, to a degree, the humanitarian worldview that is built up upon that, yeah, that you, a lot of people, and I think also honest people, you know, try to live up to, yeah.
It has to be highly motivated. That would be highly motivating to try and perhaps to be, as they are, you know, good losers, as you put it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got an element that's, you know, sure we've got our element that doesn't. That's what I mean. This is the problem with the revisionism. It just feeds some idiots as well, right? And so, kind of be careful with it. But yeah, that it's been exaggerated, et cetera, yeah. But something, I mean, but you, they were pushed out. They were pushed out, and they exaggerated. But no one wants to be pushed out. People did die.
Where am I at the Second World War? I always talk about that, or where I think I can grasp some level of sort of reality of something that really did happen. In that it did bomb the shit out of the infrastructure of Germany, broke down effectively, and then so the camps, the holding camps, turned into sort of, because they could no longer de-louse them, which is why they all shaved their heads, of course, and why they all had shaven heads. I mean, and why all the clothes had the de-lousing there, the Zyklon B at the camps. Sort of humanitarian catastrophe, and tens of thousands of people died of typhus. Oh, yeah, really, Tom? Yeah, how do you know that figure's true? Yeah, blah, blah, you can't believe it. Well, I've read reports from soldiers that were there. My grandfather was a medic in the... I wish he was alive for me to really ask him some questions, right, you know, now. But no, I get a sense that there's some truth. There's got to be some truth in it. It's the official story. It's admitted. There isn't any sort of... But in the first reporting of it, it was Alfred Hitchcock was taken in, and he made a propaganda film and showed it as a death camp. Of course, it looked fucking horrific. All these emaciated people walking around with shaved heads. They were all sort of basically refugees from the war in this holding camp. It was a nightmare. It was a refugee crisis. You know, it was a fucking mess. And so that is... That happened. And then Hitchcock coming in. Are there dummies in the piles of bodies they were moving around and stuff? Is it? I think some of the film I saw something that looked like a dummy, you know. And then you think, well, how fake was it? How much of this can we really, you know? Where's the exaggeration? I would say there was a humanitarian crisis there. It makes complete sense. There was real bombing. Obviously, loads of shit went on, infrastructure broke down, and all those things sort of add up with the Zyklon B, the shaved heads. They twisted the propaganda to make us think that it was the death camps of the Germans at that point. Only by the 60s, you know, I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? How did the truth not... By the 60s, all the British camps in Germany were proven not to be death camps, you know? Who sort of went back and said, hold on, this Hitchcock film said that they were, you know. I'm not sure anyone in the mainstream ever said that, you know.
So, they kicked the Jews out and they paid for it. You can look at it like that if you want to be banal.
If fuck knows what went on there, all the killing and
Jews killed in firing squads. I mean, it's just fucking happened. It's horrible. So it was a horrible war.
Yeah, it's really difficult to know. It's very difficult to know because even the scraps I've got from grandmas and people here, they're only scraps of things. You don't, you know. But yeah, grandma did go and steal fruit, vegetables and things from farmers' fields and things like that to get through. You know, the only stories that come over are quite benign, but banal sort of, you know. She was really proud that she was trying to get some food from somewhere and the guy wasn't giving it to her and a big black American soldier stood up for her. It's one of the stories that comes down, you know. She knew how to survive.
Yeah.
But you don't know what sort of degree. They're called die Trümmerfrauen. They were rebuilding, you know, they were taking all the bricks away. And now, if the idea of war is strategic relocation and controlled demolition, which it can be, maybe I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm saying, basically, with a lot of our modern day wars, but I'm stretched with places like Dresden and even here, the Ruhrpott, Dortmund, Düsseldorf, Cologne, Hamburg. That then teams of German people would be going around laying explosives to destroy their city completely. You know, which is what it would require, basically, because those cities, they aren't gone. They, you know.
Well, it's great, yeah.
There are pictures of the old cities the way they were, you know, aerial pictures and things. Hitler was very proud of his cities. You can see, they're gone.
Oh, yeah, they were bombed, whether it was fucking mostly from the air or mostly from lots on the ground. You could mix and match, couldn't you? You know, once you've got a war on, it's an excuse for anything. You have an air raid siren goes up, every fucker disappears off the fucking street. Of course they do, otherwise they're going to fucking die. The next thing is a fucking explosion. You know, it'd be stupid if they fucking hung around. But,
I was very taken as well with another story from a father of one of, you know, a girlfriend of mine. He was a little boy. What was interesting about his story, he said he got, you know, in one of the bomb raids, he was trapped. They managed to free him up, yeah. But what he told me was, the amazing thing is, before the bombing, you'd hear one lonely plane had come, they'd hear it, and they didn't bother trying to shoot it down or anything because they couldn't see it really, could hear it. And it would drop lights from little parachutes. It would drop a circle of them, and he said it was beautiful, it was kind of magic, you know. This little show, of course, of the lights so they can see the target, right? So first came this little, you know, as a kid, enchanting magic show, and then came the planes and the bombs. And I was taken with that because I'd never heard that before. I'd never read about that before or anything. It seemed a very personal memory, you know?
Yeah, that's... and then that was followed up with some sort of quite shocking explosion sort of thing.
Yeah, then the bombs came, and he said, you know, his house got hit, and he was trapped under the rubble, but they got him out. You know, he's still talking about it. It was like, which you would, wouldn't you, really? Especially if you're suddenly presented with an Englishman. You know, it's like 40 years later now, 30, 40 years later. And that used to happen quite often, even on train journeys. Suddenly a story had come out because I think I was a sort of cathartic appearance. You know, there's this, you know, guy who can speak German, and suddenly they can tell their story to an Englishman. It's kind of...
Yeah. I think Irving has some interesting experience because of that dynamic in his research. Speaks German as you are.
I once met a woman on
the train. Opened up to him a bit. Yeah, that's how it came across, as he related his experience, some of his experiences. Yeah, that's it. I mean, David Irving, he's a funny one. How are you on? What are you and David Irving?
Well, obviously, when I looked at the whole thing, you can't pass him by. I mean, and first of all, anyway, he had a big hit with his revisionism of Dresden.
Yes.
Which everyone bought into that. Everybody allowed that, yeah? Yes, Dresden is a war crime, and even the Germans allowed that, yeah? So, yeah. And that was incredible. I thought it was a pity, in a way, that they rebuilt the church, the Frauenkirche, you know, which was this... famous Baroque church with a massive dome, and it was this incredible ruin, because it was really three quarters of it was down. It was this shard, you know, and nothing. And that brought it home to you, that kind of amount of destruction. You know? And then
really interesting.
And now they've rebuilt it. Yeah, it's like a sugar palace now again, which is great. I mean, it's just, that's the way it should be. It's true. But for a while, I mean, if you look at the pictures of it, and I saw it like that, it was.
they hit you when you got there. You thought, fucking hell, massive cathedral, and there's just about a quarter of it left. You know?
Yeah, it's yeah. Sometimes no real regard for a lot of summer. A lot of old stuff is saved, isn't it?
Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of places. I mean, you go to Wiesbaden and you see what a German city would have looked like in the 30s and the 40s. You know, all this classicism, this neoclassicism, all these pillars, and you know, it looks like Greece, but big time. You know? They love these big, long building corridors that never end. Yeah, you know? That's what it would have looked like. Yeah, you can, so you can see the opera house there and the whole square and everything. It's very overpowering. Not particularly nice.
Okay.
I mean, you know, like I say, I would never have been here in the fucking 30s. I mean, this is the problem, you know, just because that's been exaggerated, it doesn't mean I wouldn't want anything to do with fucking Hitler and his crew. Would you?
Is that someone else coughing other than you, Matty?
No, it's just me.
Good. You're right.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's fine.
But yeah, you know, I mean, Christ's sake, you know, they do. It was awful. Collectivism, yeah. You know, you join in or you get out. That was basically it. I would have got out. I know I would. What would you have done? You'd have been the same. I mean, this is what I mean, especially, kind of as I was saying, especially people who are into conspiracy theories, people who like to think of themselves as free thinkers, who like to think of themselves as people who can talk about taboos. And, you know, it's not an environment you want to stay around in, because it was very prescribed.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing, yeah, that an Englishman in Germany as Holocaust. I mean, that is, you couldn't talk about it. But what's your wife like on it now? Is she with you on the myth of the gas chambers, perhaps?
Are we being recorded?
Yeah, we are.
That's what it's like for me, I think. Are we being recorded now?
Okay, yeah, I get your point.
I'm not
going to
say anything about, you know.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah, so it's a real strong taboo. Like you said, it's visceral, and so you're feeling it now as well. 30 years, yeah, it's inevitable, I suppose.
What happened to David Irving? You know, what happens to, I mean, these days, I mean, they've even made examples of lawyers. They even jail lawyers who defend people.
The Lipstadt trial apparently sort of, you know, hit him hard, but... Was he, you know, agent? Yeah, I mean, you know, down his own thing. Well, yeah.
Well, whatever. It's put over. The message is put over very, 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 very clearly. You know, if you want to fuck your career up? You mess with this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, is it really? I mean, it's the thing. Is it? As I can say, truth comes quite a long way down the priority list for most people.
Perhaps we could say it's something that if you're talking in, openly, you have to present it in the way we were talking about presenting songs. Do it obliquely.
Well, there is something as well. If you go back to principles, you know, principles. This idea of scapegoating an entire. It doesn't matter whether they're Jews or Muslims. I mean, these days, very often, I think, if you look back at the last 10 years, and a lot of things are said, just swap the word Muslim for Jew, and people would be shocked. No, you can't say that about Jews. You could say it about Muslims. It doesn't matter, or it's trans, or whatever it is. This idea of identifying a group and turning them into a scapegoat, you know? And then, because you can turn them into a scapegoat, you dehumanize them, and then you can do what you want to them, yeah? You can kick them out of society, and you can stop them getting jobs, and you can stop them living and you know, and basically enjoying life. You can make life hell for them, right? And that is fucked up, right? Whatever guise it takes, that's the problem, you know. So if you get a few, you try and get a few myths together to stop people doing that, yeah, because we seem to do it automatically. It's very difficult. We must do it without thinking.
Okay. Slightly, but the Muslim, you've got me thinking about war and Muslims, and identified this street art that we've got here a bit, and those herons. I don't know if I've ever talked to you about it.
No.
It's like Banksy style street art. Banksy, this trendy street artist, sort of, he's gone mainstream, really. It's like mainstream alternative, and suddenly we see, oh yes, it's part of sort of 21st century cultural. So it's like tattoos on people, these things on it. They're temporary, but they're powerful. But they're powerful. But yeah,
symbols. But this symbol in Cambridge is this heron, and I was suggesting it's from Thoth, and it's symbolic of Thoth.
The Egyptian god.
The thought, where thought comes from. And it's sort of esoteric to Isis and Thoth united to make magic, sort of thing, make a temple, an etheric temple.
What's another name for the Thames? The Thames has got another name on it. Yeah, it's called
the Isis, isn't it? So, I mean, Cambridge is Thoth and Oxford is Isis because it has the river Isis.
Right.
The Thames, as it goes through Oxford, is called the Isis. You know,
Atem, and you get Atem, and that's Thames. So it's like the joining of the weird things.
Oxford and Cambridge, of course, the two classic university cities, and then at with capital London, Golden Triangle that I've gone on about before, haven't I? Don't mean to bore you.
How are you learning, man? Open university.
It's why we're here. No, it's cool.
It is, of course it is. Got bat around ideas, you know. These people need templates to work with just as much as we do.
So, nearly Christmas spirit, Friday evening, everyone's breaking up here in England, and there was a feel-good factor, in the sense, I haven't got to go back to work till next week, till next year, for 6 days or something, 7 days. We haven't got to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
When you work all the time, it's great, isn't it? So this is the power of the holidays, you know. And then everyone's got, but they've got money because they've been working, you see. They've probably got a bit more money than me, whereas I'm out of that sort of rat race at the minute, you know.
I'm on my budget as well. So I don't, do you know what's good as well? Because I don't have to buy many presents, but most of the presents now are for kids. Grown nanas are better at that, but I have the enjoyment of going out and buying a few, you know, cheese.
It's nice. I mean, you must have a bit of holidays. I mean, when I'm working, I'm trying to see the sort of, the feel good factor of it all for society. A few days off.
I'm off. Well, the last day today till the 2nd of January.
It's all right.
Yeah, it'll do. You
can fit a few games of football in there.
Probably.
Four. You've got four Premier League games until then.
There you go.
So, that's a lot of matches until you go back.
Well, we've got the baby faces last in managing the place, so we should be all right.
But the Norwegian super sub legend that is. I mean, he's much loved. He'll be fine. He'll probably only be there for 6 months, do you think?
Yeah, so it seems like a fair deal, though. You know, it's like he was saying, they come calling, you step up. So, why not? Give it a go.
All be planned out, Denny. You know that. You know what I think about that.
I think we're looking at
anything. Not going to be winning the cup, you know.
Do you know what it'll be? It'll be a backdoor into Europe via Europa League, right? So there'll be something there for that, and then it'll be all new teams, grounds and stuff. Then they'll be able to literally, you know, it'll be like a number of set fights where it'll build them up and build them up and build them up. Be training for the new manager. See, they'll use it. They'll use it. I'm just thinking, they travel well, United, don't they? Travel very well.
Whatever the narrative at the moment, it's had them in the lowest position. When Alex Ferguson left,
it could be attached to a few royals going over to Europe as well, so visiting it, some games. You know, there's lots of different things could be attached.
It's interesting that when Ferguson, the manager, then of course Manchester United stopped winning, so it sort of reinforced the idea of this long term power actually. History. They gave him 4 years to settle into the job, or 3 years or something, and then he was there for fucking donkeys. And he was always successful right till the end. You know, the model of long term established power stands there, doesn't it? Really.
And it's haywire if any of the newfangled ways coming in needs to be disciplined. preferably someone Scottish. So, you know, same. I remember we were talking about the professionals. These were professional guys, and they had a Scottish manager looking after them. And yeah, the same. They had a stern thing. Obviously, you got the total opposite with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coming on. But the one thing I did get from his interview is he said there's no one been subbed more than him. So most of the team, so he understands how, you know, leaving people out. Which I thought was funny because obviously he was the super sub. He was the one that was used to orchestrate most of Manchester United's late wins. So, you know, was he in the know? No idea. Don't know how they run these things. No, there's probably a factor of 50 different things I can contribute.
Well, I like your thinking, though. I like your thinking. Super agent sort of thing.
Yeah. Yes, something similar. I know he was at Cardiff and he didn't do well with them, but they've literally been, they're in the Premiership now.
Yeah, but isn't there like an initiation that you've got to actually do shit and take someone down? That's part of your, isn't it? Because someone's got to go down in the city. Do you know what I mean? So I think Gary Neville had that. He had a really shit time at Valencia, I think. You know, it's like,
yes,
managing manager. So you got to earn your stripes sort of thing.
Yeah, a series of bad results. And I think he might have won the second to last game or something.
I don't know. But yeah, what could that indicate? The fact that he did so badly at Cardiff, but they got relegated. But yeah, he's liked. He's a classic. That goal, you know, it's just like,
oh my god, yeah. Last minute.
I mean, how do you script that? In fact, Tom,
I've gone through the numbers with Jana as well. It's so funny. Go for it again, that quickly. So it was they were playing Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich were going for the treble, which was their domestic league, domestic cup, and the European Cup. Manchester United were going for the treble, same alternatives there. It was 1-0 all the way through the game, and then they got 3 minutes extra time. Okay, so in them 3 minutes extra time, United scored two more goals, so that made it 2-1. So there's three goals there. And the whistle was blown for the end of extra time at 3 minutes 33 seconds. So there was 3 minutes 33 seconds extra time. So you've got two teams with three in, with three goals, but 3 minutes 33 seconds. You know, it is uncanny. Was it scripted?
The time on the clock, because I looked for the highlight with a ticker, with a clock, and I couldn't find one.
Yeah, just type in last 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah, it'll give the time. Goals, yeah, on the result. Yeah, I'll have to look.
But yeah, the whistle's blown in 93rd minute, 33 seconds, and it was 3 minutes extra time. So obviously, the two goals in extra time added the extra 30 seconds.
Wow.
But there you go, scripted. They brought on two subs that were known to score at the end of the game. So it was scripted because he brought on two people expected to score at the end of the game.
And the guy that scored the winner was the former new manager of Manchester United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So maybe a super agent. You'd have to be, wouldn't you? You'd have to be in on it. Because you'd have to train for it or something. I don't know.
But that's only numbers. Remember, numbers are just an abstraction. There's nothing, is it? It really means nothing. You could take the numbers out of that game and it'd still be significant. United still won by scripted win because they always come back and win. Can United win? Can United score? They always score. And then he goes and scores. You know, it was a funny old game. I suggest anyone to go and watch the last 3 minutes.
They hit the bar as well.
They had shots all over the place. They were all over us.
All game. It was only a surprise that they're only 1-0 down. I mean, how do you legislate for that? They would have had to get a lot of goals if they'd been. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but I suppose perhaps the thingy within the fix, they said to sort of Bayern Munich, you can keep going, and play as hard as you can. You know what I mean? Until you get two goals, but or not, and then we've got to, then whatever you get at a certain point, Man United have to then.
Well, no, because in theory, if you think about it...
What am I fucking talking? I'm thinking out loud, sorry.
No, it's fine. But in theory, no, because the two goals were scored in extra time, weren't they? You know what I mean? The last minute. So you couldn't really legislate from that. Even though United, the last 10 or 15 minutes, had lots of chances, you know, trying to get the last ball in than the usual tactics they had done in the past to get the late goal, but nothing was working. You know, it's one of them games, obviously, if you're from Manchester and you follow football up until then, it's, you know, it's emblazoned in your brain. So, you know, you know the chances that were there, and it was totally legitimate. But I think the legitimacy came because both teams were going for the treble. It was three. This was unprecedented. So it was a fair final. You know what I mean? They knew one team was better, and that was obviously the one that didn't have Roy Keane and forced goals because they got cards in the semi-final, so they were going to miss the final. So, you know, and they took Basler off in the last minute or so, last 5 minutes. So they wasn't expecting United to get two goals, you know. And it's only when you watch that the disappointment on the players' faces. I mean, the refs having to help some of the players back up and bring them to the halfway line because they're crying on the feet. So,
oh, man, it was epic.
I think that was like a fair fight. That was like, you know, when your dad steps back and lets you have a fight, whatever, in the real world.
But you think?
You know, because of the amount of times they hit the post, the goalie was lobbed, everything was just bouncing back, and Peter Schmeichel was obviously immense.
They set them both up for the treble, and then they said, right, yeah, well, yeah, have a fair fight. Interesting. You become, I have thought on those lines of how it really works. You know, I'm not saying every single game is completely controlled, you know, and contrived.
I mean, Juventus obviously were blatant. That's why they got relegated for, you know, match fixing and stuff. I mean, I think they were even fixing it for the minute people were scoring and stuff.
Oh, putting the ball out
for a throw-in on the 55th minute. And the goal was in the 56th minute, you know what I mean? What did you say?
I said, then what do you think the numbers signify for you? If you think that was then kind of, they allowed that to play out that match, what do the numbers now signify for you? The numbers that you put up first of all, you know, in the 33 at the end.
Well, no, like I say, they're arbitrary. You could take the numbers out, you can take the clock out of it, and it still ends up being two clubs that have won something which has not been done before, you know, two domestic, the league, the cup, and the European Cup.
If either of them had won it, it would have been a treble, is what we're saying.
Yeah. But there was going to be a three no matter what, you know, and it was going to be a European three.
Complete fluke that Man United got it in the last injury time, sort of thing. Those two goals.
And the 3 minutes added as well. I mean, it was a very tight game. 3 minutes was being generous. It was probably about 2 minutes. But like I say, once United scored two goals, the German team just dropped to their knees and they never got up for a minute and a half.
Oh, look, I think that in the fix of football, people thinking they're going to win it, not knowing that they're going to win or lose. Do you know what I mean? They're not in on the fix. Thing, you know, always... You know, but when you're like going for a treble, you think you're going for a treble, you know. You're
going all out for it.
People would be convincing otherwise, would it? You know, there's got to be some level of credibility. It can't be like all set pieces rehearsed in private, you know.
We see strokes of genius on a football pitch, and we do know the strokes of genius when it's good play. Also know when people who are good don't play to their ability. So, you know, even to someone who's in love with the game of football, they can see times when they get infuriated and, you know what I mean, they get frustrated with players by watching them, and they don't realise that these players are playing shit on purpose. You know what I mean? Once you see it that way, you go, oh my God, he's just playing shit on purpose, deliberately overrunning things, and, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, you better reply to that.
Nice. Right, hands up. Okay, I sometimes, you know, in a little bit of smoke, and I hadn't for a couple of days, sort of thing, and then I had one tonight, and the old short-term memory is, it's a bit funny, old boy. They kind of don't know who you are. Oh, what were we talking about?
Right, well, I'll take this opportunity to ask Matt what his opinion is on September the 11th. How many elephants died?
That is a very interesting question. It will take certain considerations.
Mm.
I don't know.
How many elephants died? It's a nice story. Nice question. How many elephants died exactly? No elephants died, and there's still one left.
Right. There wasn't even one in the plains, no.
No elephants got hurt. No elephants died. But and in fact, there's there's still one left. Yeah.
I mean, there was a dog. Let's face it. There was a dog that died. There had to be a dog, didn't there? A dog and a vicar. And not even a cat. I think cats escaped. I don't know. But there was a dog.
Probably a few louse and insects.
Yes. I mean, that was my main concern as well, Matty. Yes, I thought, fuck, how the fuck did the mosquitoes do in that shit house? When it was coming down, God. They were, yeah. Imagine that.
Whatsoever.
That easily.
All those spiders.
All those explosions. Controlled demolition, yes. Anyway.
You know, talking about numbers, you can do some fun. You know that old trick you can do with 9? You know, take your age, yeah? And so, I don't know, my age, so I'll be something. So I'll take my age, 56. Add the two numbers together. 5 and 6 is 11. Take it away from 56, and I've got 45. 4 and 5 makes 9. It doesn't matter what number you take, it'll always make 9.
Hold on. Just the last two moves. I've got 50 at the moment.
So what's your, how old are you? Are you cool with that? How old?
51.
So 5 and 1 is 6. So 6, you take 6 away from 51. What's that give you?
45.
4 and 5 is 9. Always comes back to 9.
Well, it would, wouldn't it? Delays, isn't there? Yeah, I mean,
one of those numbers things, yeah. You know?
Yes, numbers are like that. I think perhaps, movement and it's not a miracle, is it? It's like nature, formations and things, and it's the way it grows.
Big numbers too. It works. It's amazing.
Well, you've got that one, haven't you? Well, first of all, the 9's like a swirl. So think about it that way. It comes back to itself, like, But you've got so if you did 3 times 9, so and that's 9, 18, 27. So 2 and 7 adds up to 9. So any multiple of 9, obviously, between 1 and 9, the answer always adds up to 9 as well. So there's another 9 multiple. So, you could do 5 times 9. So what's that? 9, 18, 27, 36, 72. So there you go. 72. 7 plus 2 is 9.
Yeah, it's interesting how it folds in on itself all the time, yeah?
Yeah, same with your hands. Yeah, you do that with your hands, don't you?
Your fingers and your hands. It does let by, to me, it almost buys into the way that nature is perhaps a collection of cells. You know what I mean? A collection of bits.
It's our interpretation of eternal growth, I reckon. Somehow we managed to, or somehow it was given to us in mathematics.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Why does the math work? Yeah, it's just sort of like sections then fit in patterns that then bond together. You get me?
Yeah.
Maths in nature.
They're not very similar way to the way the globe is not representative of the ground, but it fits.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's interesting. Yeah, no, it's true.
There you go. Well, I think we had a nice little chat then. What shall I do? Shall I foot the stream off, or are we going to carry on?
It's good and bad bits, but it's slow at times, man.
But that was nice just to add on to the
nice. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, no, good shout, Danny.
We've got a bit of rock and roll in there from you two as well, so that was good.
We set the bar.
Have you not got any rock stories, Tom? Any good rock stories, Tom? You must have a couple of little ones. Any heroes that you used to cross paths with? Not even heroes, but people who were, we were on the same.
Loads of people on the scene in London in the kind of alternative rock scene in the sort of 90, 91, 92. Cool people, loads of faces down there at this club I used to go down to in Soho all the time. We were a resident band there down at Soho.
So I was fucking busy, man.
What was the club?
Gossips in the street. So Gossips, and it was the Alice in Wonderland Club, and it was Land Shop was opened in New York by Ringo Starr's daughter, actually. So there was a connection there, and I met Maureen Starkey, who was Ringo's down there, and they were all friends, and they were part of that sort of clique of people in there. I'd used to sit in these alcoves in this club into the early hours of the morning, talk with Maureen Starkey and her daughter, who was really cute. I think she liked me, you know, I do, you know, I, you know, yeah. So I hung out for a while, but should have gone back with them, you know. No, should I have? I don't know. She still, yeah, I hope she's
yeah,
all
Alice
right.
in Wonderland is very suggestive, of course.
I'm waffling. Yeah, so you can imagine, Alice in Wonderland, I imagine, had a hit, number one hit sort of 3 years previously when I first started playing there, but with Doctor and the Medics, who were also, so Clive from Doctor and the Medics would come and DJ there. And so Clive, well, and quite well, and he was, yeah, they'd play all this sort of, and they'd organise these trips to the coast back then with acid, with actually prescribed for you went on the trip, you had to take an acid and go on this fucking trip with Doctor and the Medics. They went to the fucking seaside in this coach trip. It was, you know, and it was like so, I mean, so retro, and no one was doing that sort of thing then. I'm talking about 80. Well, I suppose, yeah, you said the acid thing was coming back in, wasn't it? Perhaps that was a slightly, wonder if someone said somewhere they fed that in there. Interesting. But it was a cool club. You know, it was a fucking cool little cutting edge pub, really. It, you know, Lemmy would go down there and hang out with Lemmy a bit, and yeah, it was cool. As you see him on TV, you know, as in, wow, and he looked good, though. You know, he looked good then. His skin was pretty good. He looked sharp. He looked really tidy and clean and well-dressed. And he loved to play the quiz games. He's notorious for that, wasn't he? Playing the machines and the thing. But there was a quiz game in Gossips on that. And, yeah, and I loved that as well. In fact, it's a bit like me to an extent that I have an addictive personality, and somehow I could just chill out. It's almost like playing a computer game. No, it's a habit I got into. You don't have to talk to people. Something like that. Anyway, he was on speed, wasn't he? Because he kept signing his name as Wiz when he got a high score. Knowledgeable he was. And we were a good team together. You know, I was chucking in a few answers, so I was pretty sharp on that myself. I used to like those quiz ones, general knowledge, you know, in there. And actually, we liked it.
So you were a team.
We did.
Beat the machine.
Well, sorry?
So you were a quiz team with Lemmy and you beat the machine. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, man. I love it, Matty. Yeah. I love your thinking. Yeah, yeah. I was a quiz team with Lemmy. We beat the machine. He signed at Wiz. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be another line there.
Right. You've got to have a song called Wiz.
Yeah, talk about Lemmy or something. Yeah, in a team with quiz team with Lemmy. He said, "Don't fucking sign me." And there was a guy called Doug Smith. Now, the manager of Nutmeg at the time, and he was Ted's manager during the sort of the peak period. And he designed that Motorhead logo.
Motorhead's manager. What?
Yeah, Doug. Yeah, Doug Smith. His name is, and he was. Yeah, he was a fucking dude, you know. He must be 50 then, or he might, you know, maybe he was 50 or 50, maybe 55, maybe not. Yeah, he used to take the filters off cigarettes and smoke them, you know. But when I met Lemmy, Lemmy was like, "He stole every fucking thing I had."
What? I didn't understand that.
Don't sign with him.
Don't stay with him.
I'm fucking losing my voice. I'm sorry, man. I've got to start smoking.
Is that how Lemmy talked?
So he said, don't sign with him. I'm trying to do Lemmy's voice, and I used to be able to do it perfectly well, but because I've lost my voice, I can't do it.
Just go a little bit.
Don't fucking sign with him. He stole every fucking thing I had.
Okay.
Mole weren't too big then. It looked all right, but it was outstanding. But it looked he looked handsome. He looked handsome, and that is the picture I have of him. One of those sort of magical things. You look at someone, they look larger than life, and there he was.
Yeah, cool.
It keeps, you know, it's straightforward enough way. Not too, you know, it's cool. It's just cool, dude. It's what you saw, you know. Yeah, so Gossips. Yeah, oh yeah, man. That was what can I tell you about? You know, a little bit on the fringes of the Beatles. You know, with talking to Maureen Starkey down there and knowing her daughter a little bit, and she had this Gossips in this shop, and
people, there was some for money a bit, you know, there was some around, you know, the guy who ran it, Christian, was just, but anyway, this, well, I don't know who fucking ran it. I don't know. He didn't run, he only ran this fucking Monday night. They came from money in a way, sort of thing. A bit came from landed money or something. Do you know what I mean? It was all the power structure in there.
Yeah, everything goes back to that in England. There's always someone who owns a big house somewhere.
Maybe Christian Mander.
I tell you my story about Slash, didn't I? We were in Copenhagen, and we were playing in Copenhagen. While we were there, we got three nights in Copenhagen in three small kind of punk clubs, you know. And while we were there, Guns N' Roses were there, so they kind of moved our one gig a day, so we had a day to hang around, you know. And I don't know, after one of the gigs or something, we're in the bar, and this guy comes in. All of a sudden, the doors fly open, and this guy comes in. Looked at him, and I thought, I know him from somewhere, you know. And he came straight towards us, me and my drummer, as we were standing there, and he came straight towards us. And he went up to Petrus, the drummer, you know, and he kind of slapped him on the arm and said, "Hey, we need a drink here. Anybody got any money?" And in that kind of moment, until that, both Petrus and I, we both thought, we know this guy. Was he the roadie with the last band we played with? What was he, you know? And then suddenly dawned, this was Slash, you know. Because it didn't dawn that he was Slash really properly. He said, you know, he said, "Hey, you got any money here? Can anybody, you know, can I get a drink?" And in that moment, like, there was four bodyguards came in, big, tall, black dudes, you know, chocolate-coloured dudes, and kind of one from every shade of complexion. There was a white one, a black one, and a couple in between, you know what I mean? Sunglasses, yeah? Well, into the fucking club and surrounded him. Wham! And then, now we know who it is, you know? And they were babysitting him. He couldn't do anything. He didn't have any money. He just ran out of the limousine quick before they could catch him. And he had that moment of freedom. He could feel like he was a normal person. And shit, he hadn't even got any money to buy a drink.
Did you buy him one? Did you get to offer him
that? No, we didn't get that. As soon as the guys turned up, right, people like us weren't let through. Nobody interesting was let through. No seriously interesting women were let through. Only the kind of like, fans that were overawed and wouldn't pose any threat, you know?
Yeah, then they sort of sussed that out and they did that, yeah.
The seriously good-looking women didn't get through the circle. The interesting people, you know, men as well, didn't get through the circle, so no.
So you remind me of the gossips. I'm talking about gossips and the bouncers in there. There was black guys and they were like these from the sort of... They were big, man. They were just... You couldn't get past them, you know. There were a couple there that were just, you know, these guys were just such big frames and they could just stand in a doorway and you just couldn't get through even if they, you know, they could pass out and you wouldn't get past them, you know. You wouldn't get through the door. You know, they were so, and they were so good at keeping it absolutely cool, you know, because of that, you know, that was great. No problem at all, you know. They were really chilled out.
I didn't get the first half of that. I just heard, no problem at all. We're just really chilled out. It is no problem at all. Have we taken the bot out now? I don't know if the bot's in or not.
No, the bot's still here. Bot's sat on money. That sounded like a G. That's a G, that. What's that?
No, it's the, yeah, it's the E that's got a read factor. But,
E's acid. Fucking drugger.
I was looking at some of the E thing today. I was revisiting some of the Essex connection of the E's, the Leah Betts thing. And
Leah Betts, whose name is a fucking anagram of tablets. Ah, tablets. Or ha, tablets. H-A, tablets.
I mean, that
Leah Betts, she's the one that died. Her name's an anagram of ha, tablets, man. I'm not having it. Sorry.
Oh, that's an interesting. I didn't really go into it in depth, but obviously it's 1989.
I think it was round about the time I started taking them, so about
1985, wasn't it?
I thought it was earlier.
Yeah, best thing. So
I tried them early on, was never struck.
No, they'd been in a while then, hadn't they? But they were slowly crept up, and then it exploded with the... Because I was thinking that the, you know, the 90s...
Oh, yeah, no, it came in the late 80s, and was talking about the resurgence and the...
No, Leah Bett's case, yeah. You know, I'm just trying to get the timeline in my head. It was 95. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be right. Remember, my research should be about 2 or 3 years at
death. R tablets. Now, her father was a police...
Oh, H-A tablets.
So, well, I wonder. Her father was a policeman, and...
They made a fund out of... I'm not saying anything about the fund. I'm saying they made a fund, and it was to collect money, and... I just thought it was ironic that her name's an anagram of Hat Tablets. So you can say what you want. Remember, you know, I just state my opinion. You can say what you want from it.
Well, it's an anagram. It is an anagram of tablet. No, you're right. You're just saying what you saw. Now, how can we interpret that? You're not committing there. You don't know.
Well, first of all, it's seen. Like with the Ariana Grande, they always say a 22-year-old killed 22 people in the 22nd or 2200 hours. No,
it's Islamic. Yeah, you're not having that. We know. Some things you know, don't you? And it's nice to know in a way. You know, it's obvious, you know.
Yeah. Now, if they want to find me 22 dead bodies that died at 9:59, they rounded up to 10 o'clock, and it was really the 21st. You know, and they want to say, well, we lied to get everything to 22. I'd say, right, okay, let's see the evidence. But once it's all put together with that backing, you know, the numbers, the numerology, even though I don't pay any attention to it, I know these lot do. You know, and the same with that Leah Bett's name, the fact that it's Ha Tablets, and it's about someone dying. That's subliminal because it's a real short name as well. We know how the brain works.
It's a bit like I was sort of dithering about trying to express myself about why I didn't revisit the victims particularly earlier, is because in a way I am sort of like, when you talk about Leah Bett, I'm thinking, do I really want to go back and look at that father crying about his daughter having died? You know what I mean? Do I really want to go through that trauma again and re-examine that and try and see that it is fake? You know, that it was. But in a way, that's the only way to find her alive.
I'm dismissing it now just for that. So, you know, but like I say, it's when you were saying it's not fakeology, the daft thing is this, you know, you don't consider yourself to be a fakeologist, even though your opinions are the same on all those certain things. The daft thing is just by identifying someone like that, chances are you're going to look into that now, and there'll be something hooky about it. And, someone else would have got onto it a different way. I just got onto it because of the name.
No, look, Denny, I've put it.
It's weird, isn't it? This is what I mean. It doesn't matter how you get there.
It's a big one. I've put the picture there and called it a psyop. You know, it is a psyop. It looks a psyop. It could be like a control in the sort of for the criminal underworld a bit in the presented view, the narrative. You know, the sort of the drug thing, because the public opinion was really stirred up, and so you could get things done.
It demonised clubs, but also made kids like buy a lot more drinks in clubs, and so the prices went up of all the drinks.
Yeah, so for ignorant people like me, this is obviously, this Leah Bett's died of, what, an overdose of ecstasy or something, did she?
Yeah. But...
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Yeah, I think she had some sort of reaction and blew up.
Dehydrated.
Drank too much. Yeah, she dehydrated or maybe overhydrated. I don't know.
That's right. Overhydration, wasn't it? They said she. I think she made. They actually said she drowned by drinking too much water.
Drowned in herself. Something.
So much water because she was so neurotic about dehydrating, apparently. You know. Or isn't it? If you want to sort of say, because you'd say, did you see her drinking water? Yeah, she was drinking water. Oh my God, she was drinking water. Oh no. Yeah, I mean, do you know what I mean? It's like, she could. It's a good, you could drink a load of fucking water without it doing any harm, really.
Your body's quite resilient as well.
It's a good cover, though. It's a simple cover. No, but if it was, you know, it's fake. But that's what they said, didn't they? So, sense that you would have...
Well, yeah, hang on. There's the answer to the riddle then, Matt. It's like, when a psychologist sees a glass of water, he's, you know, I mean, he sees what killed Leah Betts. That's it.
Ah, that's an inside joke. Ooh.
Anyway, that's going back a bit.
Yeah, for the initiated.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Very gay, Tom.
Excuse me?
Sorry, mate.
You all right? You're blowing your nose.
I'm scratching the fucking been eating raisins while I was talking to you all this time. I kept it a secret.
I was embarrassed earlier. What did Russ was saying, quoting a film, and I thought he was talking to me. What?
What was he quoting? One of his gay films again?
No, I don't know. He likes gay films.
Yeah, so there you go. Right, well, come on then. Conspiracy, now you've got to keep going here. We're going to have either an Australian or an American
coming Christmas in special. It's a Christmas special. Come on, give me some fucking energy, Dad. It's only 5:05. Yeah.
That's it, you see. We'll just carry on. Right, we've done sports. Let's not go into politics yet. We'll leave JFK out for a bit. We can re-examine 9/11 if you want. I'm quite comfortable with that. Matt's told us he don't think any elephants died on that day. That's fine. Let's skip beyond it. How much do you think that affected everyone, even the people that aren't really interested in it? You know, because they think people crash planes into buildings, and that in itself is pretty atrocious. You know, thinking that is pretty. You know, that's a scary thought.
I believed it when it happened.
I'm not getting me wrong. It doesn't seem out of the realms of possibilities.
It's a fucking.
Nevertheless, nowadays, 15 years on, it's like when you understand nukes weren't real. You go, I understand now how they keep it going with the fear and all that. But like Russ was saying, terrorism's pretty much died down now. Now it's all about social justice warriors. And, oppression being relieved, almost like Middle Earth. But the people still think that crazy thing happened, which. It's still...
And then there's all these little styles. There's a continuing Islamic fundamentalist thing. Oh, I was talking about those street art with Banksy street art earlier, wasn't I? I didn't finish what I was going to say. Before I forget...
Alluding back to John's interview there with I forgot his name. Rob McCall.
Okay, cool.
Anyway. But, so even, that shield jumped in saying I had relatives that died on that day. Now, whether or not he's referring to the buildings or the planes, or was he one of the firemen? Because they're the three lots of people that I do not believe died on that day. But I have no idea on that Vixen report. I've never looked into it apart from the Vixen report. Doctored images. So, but what's to come from saying no one died? Is that just to dismiss it all? I don't believe anyone died, but it is a pretty big blanket statement.
Yeah, I think that question has... You'd hope not. You'd say, well, I fucking well hope not. Because what kind of drill are you fucking running here? One that's that fucking dangerous is going to hurt people. But as I say, if I have to accept that Hillsborough, for example, was a psyop, we fucking squeezed some people into that fucking pen, And they could have been broken bones, You could have been really uncomfortable, and it almost had to be like that to an extent. So it was war, and you see that, it was this humanitarian catastrophe. It really shaped. Well,
apparently, there was a crush the other day. Someone, there was a fire or the gun was, set off, and there was a crush in a club. I think it was a Mexican club.
Yeah, so that would open the sort of possibility of the periphery of like major psyops. So they say, well, it's a sacrifice of controlling people, and it'll save lives in the long term. That's the noble lie of it, isn't it?
Yeah, an organic control event.
Anyway, the thing about the street art, the Banksy street art. So they've introduced it into Cambridge just in recent years. Banksy's sort of become trendy now and gone in the mainstream, but. King Street has one there. Just right at the top of King Street, there's one of these herons. A little bit, and I said, yes, they're getting in a social identity via the real underground, because it was just a guy who lives just down a road. I met him, He's just a fella. But there was, you know, there's been a little rumour around, and I did speak to him. I said, "You met Banksy, haven't you?" And he smiled. Yeah, he had. So Banksy's actually, he's actually kind of Banksy connection there. But, and they were very, they're very Banksy-like. Anyway, there's certain road going up Mill Road into Cambridge. Mill Road's kind of like the urban area, the sort of, as much as anything in Cambridge, the kind of ethnic left-wing street, you know, if you like, as it goes in. But there was this guy, it said war. It just said war, and there was like a red rose or something, and there was a little explosion. I have to find a picture of it. Yeah, so he'd done one like that all over the. There's these herons all over the city, and then that, and then so that was on the wall, and then for a couple of years, boom, they fucking took it down, and they built a £40 million mosque there. So you can't see where that war's written on the wall anymore. But every time you go past there, you cannot fucking miss this fucking monstrous mosque. It looks fantastic, actually. The woodwork in there is great. But it's really, you know, so you always look at it when you go past because they're still building it as we speak, you know. But it's simple as that. Just in a city, they can have war on a wall for a little while, and then they can put a... before they put the mosque up, because it's part of the dynamic of, it seems, of war at the moment.
Yeah, constant changing of territories and mindscapes.
Islamic fundamentalism.
Landscapes and mindscapes being swapped.
Islamic fundamentalism means war, but at the same time, we're integrated because we're building a mosque for them, you know. So it's, yeah, projection into... Yeah, it's a paradox.
Well, we want to get along with people by nature, don't we? We try to get along with everyone by nature. The aristocrats know that.
Yeah, that's right. Get on with it, don't we? So we're going to. And
I tell you what, I was thinking the other day, do you remember that film They Live? You know, where the fella puts the glasses on and he sees all the, you know, the subconscious, you know, mind programming, you know, in the movies and, you know, magazines and things like that. It's in America, obviously, and it's aimed at, you know, the poor. But in the film, it's represented as mostly white people. It says, get married, reproduce. Get married, reproduce. That's one of the main things. And that'd only be good for America, wouldn't it? You know,
I remember seeing, because I saw that quite late, and I thought, well, that's certainly not a meme they're producing at the moment, is it, for all these white people?
No, you know, I mean, and obey. I mean, you know, and all oh, right, and it's, and I'm looking at it thinking, it actually looks like pretty good if you just, you know, follow the leader. Oh, well. But, yeah. The aliens, you see, you know, just misguided, that's all it is. Right, I reckon we've murdered that, then I'm going to move the stream box, because otherwise I'll get shouted at for leaving it in room 11. So you've been listening to Fakeologist Radio. You're going to say goodnight, Matt?
Goodnight, Matt.
There you go. You, Tom.
Hey, night, Danny. Night, Matt. Hey, well, I talked to you soon.
I'm just going
to
move the bot.
Before Christmas. Yeah. But, happy
I'm
Christmas.
I'm just moving the bot.
Oh, that's what you did. Sorry, yeah. Goodbye. Radio,
we can't go out clean, that would be awful. Yeah.
Hello, this is Elf Sushi from Tokyo, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.